So both of the language articles were passed. All right. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We are almost ready to provide you with all of the documents to the public. We have passed out all the two language articles for our bill. Okay. So if anyone doesn't have those yet, they're available at the table. The spreadsheets are being copied, and so we'll have those shortly. So what we will do is have our staff go through the language article, and then by the time the spreadsheet, and then we'll go through the spreadsheet. And just by way of introduction, I mean, I'll probably make some comments about the bill, but just to start off, I'll remind everyone that we had a 7% cut target, like all the other budget divisions, and we didn't have we were lucky to have some federal stimulus money that we were able to put our imprint on with the separate bill, but we weren't able to use any federal stimulus money to balance our budget in these state agency areas. And so we've got a lot of cuts in this bill. And we also accepted some of the governor's fee recommendations. And it's not a lot of new, very, 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 very little new spending. So it's not a really fun bill to present to all of you, but it's a necessary bill. And I think it's a fair and balanced approach to what we had to work with. So let's go through what's in here, and then we can have some discussion. So, Mr. Knopf, would you like to start? Please.
Yes, Madam Chair and members. If you see the Environment Art 1B, it says Article 1, Environment and Natural Resources. I'm just going to go through that quickly here. The first page is just the boilerplate language, nothing to talk about there. On the second, on page 2, the rider on 2.10 to 2.18 is a base rider. On 2.19 to 2.25, that's a base rider, but you'll see a little bit of a change. In past years, we've referred to a past chapter law for how the feedlot grant program works. But what we've done now is, you'll see later on, there's some statutory language is basically codify that language. So it's a little different, but it's the same language. It's just put in the statutes rather than referring to a past law. 2.26, well, the rest of those two riders are base riders. The top of page 3, that the tank or the new technology review, that's a base rider. 3.16 to 3.18, that would be the base numbers in the PCA that now for assessment and monitoring of lakes, rivers, and streams. 3.19 to 3.22, this is really a continuation of the direction to the agency, to the PCA, for the continuation of having their rulemaking process better align the water permit fee revenue with the cost of issuing the permits. And the base rider, 3.23, that's a base rider. And we go on to air. And the top of page 4, that's a base rider. Same with 4.7, 4.11, base rider, 4.15. 4.18 is really the same thing we had underwater for the continuation to better align their fee revenue. Base rider in the bottom of page 4, that's the Superfund money. On page 5, 5.7 is a base rider, 5.12. Is a base rider on the water supply monitoring. 5.21 is a base rider from 2 years ago with the environmental health tracking and biomonitoring. Bottom of page 5, the SCORE block grants, that's a base rider. Same with the environmental assistance grants and loans on the bottom of page, the last one on page 5. If you go to page 6, it's a base rider on the Metropolitan Solid Waste Landfill fee. And then 6.10 to 6.15 is from Senator Sieben's bill, Senate File 1955, the composting grant program. But also the next rider, 6.16 through 6.29, that's again was also part of Senator Sieben's bill. It's the report requirement. And then on the bottom of page 6, there's a provision of Senator Scheid's. It's the money for the that was part of the fiscal note. There's one technical on 6.34 that should be 116.9410, not 116.9411.
Shall we go ahead? Let's see. On 6.34 to change the second number?
The second number to the last digit of the second number from 1 to 0.
Someone like to move that?
Well, but sure, you could just
we can just incorporate it. All right,
because you haven't adopted this document yet, so.
Okay, there you go.
And Madam Chair, the top of page 7, you've got some base rider on the availability appropriations. And then on 7.17 to 7.25, you have a rider that was a recommendation of the governor. You'll see later on there's a continuation of the statutory appropriation for the electronic waste recycling. And what this does is it requires a report before the next budget cycle of the legislature on making that a direct appropriation. Subdivision 6 is cross media. Subdivision 7, administrative support. And that's a base rider on the bottom of page 7. There's a new twist on that. The discussions with Mr. Mueller about this, whether or not to have a minimum that needs to be transferred over to make sure that a number of these landfills and Superfund sites are cleaned up. I'm not sure what that number will be, but we do have a blank in there right now on 8.4. And then in Section 4, we get into the Department of Natural Resources. All boilerplate language on the rest of page 8, including base riders on the bottom of page 8. And then page 9, basically all base riders for the department. I can go over those specifically, but since they're base riders, I didn't think you wanted to go through those that spend much time on them. Page 10, we get into water resource management, and again, you see the base riders for Red River Mediation and the Upper Mississippi Headwaters Board. And then there's also a base rider on the ring dikes. On the bottom of page 10, you've got a base rider on forest management operations. Actually, that's kind of I think this is where the $2 million per year that was in the governor's budget. Mr. Mueller may know more exactly which number we're going to put in there, but I think it's related to that. And then on the top of page 11, you've got some more administrative recommendations from the Heritage Enhancement Account in the Heritage Enhancement Account and the Game and Fish Fund to spend some of the money in forestry and managing forest land. So you've got 11.1 to 11.5. That's a new rider. Same with 11.6 to 11.13, basically on the ecological classification system. 11.14. And the rest of the page, that's a base rider, deals with the firefighting costs. It provides the open appropriation along with the direct appropriation for the prevention, pre-suppression, and suppression costs. And on the top of page 12.3, that's another base rider from the FMIA. And then you have the base rider for the Forest Resources Council at 12.9. And then a base rider for the cost share assistance, which we may not be including from the spreadsheet, on 12.13. Again, the spreadsheet will drive on which riders, if we need to make adjustments in riders when you adopt the numbers in the spreadsheet. Madam Chair, then we get into parks and trails management. We have the governor's recommendation for this outdoor recreation participation program. On page 12, 12.21 to 12.30, you can see that it's taken money from several accounts in the Natural Resources Fund to promote nature-based outdoor recreation participation. On the bottom of page 12, you have a base rider from the Water Rec account. And then on top of page 13, we also include the GPS coordinates for River Gauge. That was a part of a governor's initiative starting on 13.2. And then 13.5. That's a governor's rec on the Mississippi Whitewater Park. That's an extension of an existing appropriation. On 13.14, that's a base rider. Although in the middle, on 13.17 to 13.19, you can see that there is going to be some money each year for coordinated activities with Explore Minnesota Tourism, and that was part of the governor's recommendation, supplemental recommendations, if I remember right. And then 13.23, that's a base rider for the Snowmobile Grant and Aid Program. 13.32, that's a base rider for the Off-Highway Vehicle Grant and Aid Program. And then on 14.8, you have a base rider for state trail operations. And then on 14.14 through 14.21, this is from Senate File 909, Senator Bach's bill and the C.J. Ramstead Trail. Again, this is basically telling the commissioner to put the signs up after the commissioner's found enough money else from private sources. To non-state sources, basically sufficient to put the signs up. We're into fish and wildlife management now. On 14.27, we have the governor's rec on the gray wolf research on 14.31, the governor's rec on the TB appropriation. And I think, Madam Chair, another technical here, looking at Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet, this wasn't in the language that the governor, that was sent over by the governor, but I think after the period, we need to say this is a one-time appropriation.
On which line?
On 14.33 after the period. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, this TB control is a one-time appropriation, so we'll just, you can just include that and incorporate that in. On the bottom of page 14.34, we're getting into the governor's recommendation. That's the walleye stamp account. That's appropriating the money that they're expecting to come in from the sales of the walleye stamp. On 15.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Could I interrupt just a second there, Mr. Knopf? Do we know how long that bovine TB thing will continue?
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, no, we don't. But as I understand it, Mr. Mueller can correct me if I'm wrong on that, that money should be one-time appropriation because that's the way the governor made the recommendation, is for one-time money.
But it's for 2 years.
But it's for 2 years. But okay. It's one-time money. They'll have to come back for more if it persists.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Knopf?
And Madam Chairman, 15.4, we have the base for the accelerated wildlife health programs. We have the base for the wildlife. And then we've got a number of, from the various accounts. These are all, the rest on page 15 are all base appropriation or base riders. So I don't think we need to spend a lot of time. These are from the specific stamp and surcharge accounts that have been carried for a number of years. It goes all the way through page 16. I think it goes all the way down to, on 16.28, those are all the stamp and surcharge riders. And then you have, this is a base rider, but it is basically for the grassland wetland complexes. And I know the governor, I think, zeroed that out, but we do, when you see the spreadsheet, there is some money left in there. 16.33, that's a base rider on extending appropriations for grants. We see this in a lot of the agencies here because the grants many times aren't encumbered soon enough before the end of the, or they're actually under contract before the end of the biennium, but the money doesn't go out in time. So we'll see those extensions. Subdivision 7 on page 17, we get into ecological services. And the first rider there is a base rider on the non-game wildlife account. The second rider is from the Heritage Enhancement Account. That's, again, a base rider. And then we have the invasive species, which is a base rider since 2007 because we created the account in 2007. But that's a base rider on the invasive species account. And, again, we'll get more into the financing as Mr. Mueller goes through the spreadsheet. And then on the bottom of page 17, it's a new rider. It basically tells the commissioner to establish a stakeholder process to review the strategic direction and program delivery of integrated ecological resource management, healthy watersheds, and landscapes. This gets at the whole issue where the department was talking about the possibility of merging ecological services and waters. But then also in 18.4 to 18.7, it says unless it's expressly authorized by law, the commissioner shall not merge ecological services, the duties and waters duties prior to July 1, 2011. So it puts a two-year moratorium unless the legislature does something else. Then now we're getting into enforcement, and again, these are a number of base riders here. I think all of them on page 18 are base riders, including the county law enforcement grants. And then you'll notice on 19.13, I want to specifically mention that this is a base rider in the overtime for officers. This has been carried for a number of years. And then on the bottom of page 19, this was a base rider. Now, it was basically Senator Chaudhry from 2 years ago had the bill that basically clarified and created this grant program for off-highway vehicle groups that would help in enforcing some of the off-highway vehicles and providing safety and education. And so this was part of the 2007 bill and is carried here as a base rider. And then, Madam Chair, on the top of page 20, this was a rider that was added, 20.3, that was added 2 years ago. It's included here to continue, that the commissioner must continue to publicize opportunities for conservation officers when possible in the biological sciences. Subdivision 9, operations support. This is a base rider on the money that goes to Como Zoo and the Duluth Zoo. It's three zoos that get funded. The Minnesota Zoo has a separate appropriation, so it's carried there. Now we get onto the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The first rider is a base rider on the block grants. The second rider on 21.8 is a base rider for the SWCDs. And then on 21.24, these are for the cost-sharing grants. That's, again, a base rider. 21.31 is a cooperative weed management program that was enacted 2 years ago. And, again, carried here as a base because there was money in the base for that that was enacted 2 years ago. And then on 22.3 to 22.8, that's the Minnesota River Joint Basin Joint Powers Board, although Senator Fredrickson has a bill to change the name of that. For now, that hasn't been enacted, so for now, I guess we'll keep the same name. And that's a base rider. 22.9 to 22.12, that's the Area 2 basin projects. 22.13 to 22.19, that's a base rider that has been carried for a while. Actually, that's not a base. I'm sorry. That's a recommendation of the administration. It comes out of the auditor's report from 2 years ago where there was some concern about the way the board was keeping track of how all the watershed districts and soil water conservation districts were spending the money, and basically performance reports. And so this continues what was done 2 years ago with that. And again, you have the Wetland Conservation Act enforcement on 22.20, and that's to continue, again, the additional money that was put in 2 years ago for the Wetland Conservation Act implementation and enforcement. And then it's a base rider on 22.23 to 22.27 that basically says that any of the grant programs in Bowser are available until expended, and that they can trade years if the money is insufficient for that year. And then we get into the Metropolitan Council now, and I'll go to the top of page 23, and we've got those are base riders, generally the general fund grants and then the lottery and lieu grants starting on 23.4. Minnesota Conservation Corps, that's a base rider that basically says that for the money they spend from the Natural Resources Fund, they have to do it through an agreement with the Commissioner of Natural Resources. The Zoological Board, that's, again, a base rider dealing with as I mentioned earlier, that's the lottery and lieu money for zoos. And then the Science Museum, we'll go to the top of page 24. Actually, we don't have a rider for them, so that's just the money. Top of page 24, now we'll get into the statutory language changes. And you'll see the first part here, these are a number of fee provisions that were recommended by the administration. This also, sections 10 and 11 were carried in Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 121, as there were some additions that Senator Saxhog was making to that. Basically, what this would do is set up a supplemental application and monitoring fee for these utility crossings. And so that's an additional fee, and that's in Section 11. But also on 24.11 to 24.12, this was Senator Saxhog's idea on basically making sure that all the money that they receive for licenses and permits, when they're using the beds of navigable waters, that money should go to the permanent school fund. We do that. We have the same provision for mining. If you're mining within the bed of a public water, that money has to go into the permanent school fund. So this was set part of Senator Saxhog's bill, and that's in addition to the fee language, the rest of the fee language that you see that was recommended by the administration. So Section 11 deals with that supplemental application and monitoring fee. You will note on the monitoring fee, once they're finished with the project, that the leftover monitoring fee does get submitted or remitted back to the person who pays the fee, I think in all of these. And then Section 12, you've got the conveyance of interest in land, the state and federal governments. This is basically when the commissioner is going to assess fees for reviewing the application, preparing the easement when an easement is issued. And then Section 13 deals with road easements. So the commissioner is going to charge fees when a road easement, when they apply to cross-state DNR land for a road easement. You can see it on page 26. And again, the monitoring fee, there's a monitoring fee that's included, but the remaining balance is again remitted back to the person. And then here's a conveyance of unneeded state easements. Sometimes the state conveys back unneeded easements. And on page 27, the state will assess a landowner who applies for the release of the easement, where the state has an easement over that property and is releasing it. And then This is on 27.18 to 27.25. You'll see in Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet that money in the invasive species account, there are some problems with the way that the funding is worked out. It wasn't actually recognized by the administration. There's that $700,000 a year hole, I think, in the invasive species account. So what this would say is that each year the Commissioner of Finance will transfer a blank amount, and that'll be determined on the spreadsheet, from the water recreation account to the invasive species account to fill that hole. And then on section 16, this is dealing with the easements for ingress and egress. Right now it says without charge. There'll be a charge for that based on this. In fact, you'll see on the top of page 28, you'll see that assessment for the ingress and egress. And then, as I mentioned on the rider earlier, section 17 is the C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail. There's the language, the rider from Senator Bach's bill, I think it was 909. And then on the bottom of page 28 and the top of page 29, this was from Senator Chaudhry's bill, Senate File 353, prohibiting the sale of lands within the outdoor recreation system for the purpose of anticipated savings to the general fund. That bill was actually passed by this division to full finance. As far as I know, it hasn't been heard in full finance. And then section 19, this is part of the new fees that are going to be, when the fees, the new fees that are being put in place here for the easements, they're being placed in the land management account, and in the governor's recommendation, the language didn't include this account, basically amending the account to basically identify that those things are going to be also included. And what this does is suggested to Mr. Watson to that we should actually amend that section also to acknowledge that. Section 29, this is the mining fees. You'll see on page 30. 2 years ago, in the Environment, Natural Resources, and Energy Appropriation Bill, there were some temporary mining fees that were instituted. You'll see a repealer later on of those fees from 2 years ago. And this is what's recommended by the administration for a permit to mine. And you can see the fee levels on the top of page 30. And then in section 21, we basically have a permit amendment application fee submitted with a written application. And then on the bottom of page 30, you've got a permit assignment application. Again, these are all recommendations of the administration in the mining area for fees, for the application fees. And then there's also some changes to the mining administrative account, basically to recognize the new sections that will be included. We'll see it later on. And then also to make sure that the earnings accruing from investment of the account remain with the account until appropriated. Section 24 is a section recommended by the administration, and it sets up a reclamation fees. And I won't go over the details of the language, but it does provide that they have to have an annual permit to mine fee associated with it, and also a supplemental application fee for taconite and non-ferrous metallic minerals mining operations. So this was recommended by the administration as part of the administration's budget. And that goes all the way through on page 32.27. And again, section 25, this was from Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 121. And what it does is it rewrites, basically when you're doing a some type of a land transaction where you're exchanging land, the current law requires the legislature to act on it unless there's the same amount of shoreland available in the same area. And the issue is sometimes when you're exchanging school trusts for other DNR land, you don't necessarily need to do that because they're both going to be managed by the state. They're both in public land. So what this does is it gives them a little more flexibility when they're doing Class A to Class A. And Class A is basically anything that's managed by the Department of Natural Resources. So basically they can go ahead and exchange land the school trust land may be on a shoreland. They could exchange it for forest land that would be productive to put money into the trust, and then the state land the non-trust land would be on the shoreland or whatever. So that it would allow some more flexibility in doing some of those exchanges. And that was Senator Saxhog's idea. And then on page 33, you'll see this is the wildlife management area PILT language. And what this does, you'll see a blank on 33.24. This will be driven by the spreadsheet, but you'll see a blank percentage reduction in the amount of money that would be paid for those wildlife management area, for PILT to the local governments for the wildlife management area lands. And we'll see some of the regular PILT language later in here, too. On page 27, this is a recommendation of the administration. It gets back to the deer feeding. Some of you may remember in 1993, I think it was, when quite a bit of money in the Game and Fish Fund was used for deer feeding. The surcharge, the $1 on the licenses, was supposed to be used to repay that money. What this does is basically forgive the loan for the deer feeding. And it kind of acknowledges that more money has been spent on fish than wildlife in the last few years out of that account than was coming in. And so there's no reason to kind of keep this loan out there for the deer feeding portion of it, that they should be able to spend it on deer feeding or other deer management activities.
Mr. Knopf, how much of that was paid off?
It's something less than the $2.5 million. I don't remember. This was part of a structured deal back in the 93, and I don't remember all.
Vaguely.
Yes.
My first year, yeah.
It engendered some controversy when it was coming through the legislature in 93. And then, Madam Chair, then the next section, on page 35, this is, and you'll see that the numbers aren't in here, but Mr. Mueller will talk about it in the spreadsheet. There are some, looking at increasing some water use permit processing fees, especially for the larger units, for larger fees and for the summer surcharge. So basically getting at the real large users and the summer lawn waters. So that's basically through 36.25. Then you see section 29 on page 36. This was a recommendation of the administration for the permit application fees. And then I think you'll see on the top of page 36. No, it's actually in the next section. I'm sorry. So you'll see a change in the way that the language is worded there as far as how the fees and getting basically cleaning up some language on that doesn't matter anymore. Section 30, you see the field inspection fees, and then you see the on 37.22 fees collected should be credited in an account in the Natural Resources Fund and are appropriated to the commissioner. So it's a statutory appropriation. You'll see that on Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet for the field inspection fees later. And section 31, this deals with the 2-year additional statutory appropriation for the electronic waste account. This is basically the legislature 2 years ago gave them 2 years of a statutory appropriation, and then what this does is extends it out for another 2 years for that. And then we saw earlier there's the report that's supposed to come in to make a recommendation for direct appropriations to the 2011 legislature. Section 32, this gets at what the discussion this committee a while back when the PCA was discussing the SCORE grants, and Senator Kubley and others brought up the point that there's their counties generally only, a lot of counties only get the minimum fee. You can see on 38.34, it's $55,000 in a fiscal year. Well, even with an increase in levels of funding, those counties wouldn't see an increase. So in existing law, there was some language that said that if the amount available for distribution was less than the amount in fiscal year 2001, that's basically $14 million, then they were able to reduce the minimum amount to take care of that. So what this does is also says if you appropriate more than $14 million in a year or more than the base amount in 2001, then you increase that minimum fee proportionally, the same way you would as if you decrease it. So that would make sure that if you any money that you increase SCORE grants, all counties would receive somewhat of something of an increase proportionally. And then section 33, this is again, we saw the appropriation before from Senator Siebens, composting competitive grant program, and that's just the language from that on page 39. Page 40, this is the language from Senator Olsen, Senate File 383, yard waste, the prohibition without using the bags couldn't be dropped off without them being biodegradable. Section 35, this I mentioned earlier in going through the appropriations. This was, again, a recommendation to Mr. Watson. Instead of referring back to that law from several years ago for our feedlot grants, that the language, might as well put it in the statute since it's kind of where you're starting to use it every 2 years, and then basically have it statutory. So you'll see, starting on page 41, you'll see this new subdivision 2 on county feedlot program grants, three-part formula. And then you have a subdivision 3 on the minimum grant, prorated grant, and transfers. That's all language that 2 years ago we just referred to the rider from 2 years earlier to put that into place. And rather than specifying a rider from a law several years earlier, it's thought that it's better to just put it in the statutes. And that's what this does, is put that in the statutes. And it's basically, it's the same language, except, of course, for stylistically, we do things a little bit different in statutes sometimes. But otherwise, that's the same language. I just wanted to make sure people were aware of that and didn't get too worried about it. And then on page 42, section 36, we begin Senator Scheid, Senate File 225. And it's all the language the committee, the division heard this the other day. It's basically, this is as amended by the committee or by the division all the way through section 4 or page 45, 46, point 7 or point 17, excuse me. And there is a report section, but that was codified, and it's a one-time report, and you'll see that later on as an uncodified section rather than codified. Section 42, that's again from Senator Olsen's bill on the biodegradable and compostable label on the compost bags. Section 43, that was from Senator Dibbles, 1624, and that deals with the Hennepin County money they collect from the sale of energy and recovered materials. And again, that was heard by division. And this is the way it was amended by the division. In Section 44, now we get into the regular PILT language again. This basically would allow us for a percentage reduction in the payment rates for PILT. In Section 47, that's the general payment to the counties. And then in Section 45, this is how the counties distribute the money once they receive it. And this would also provide a reduction into that formula that the county would use in distributing the money based on the same percentage reduction. And again, this is based on the recommendations of the administration. They have a 20% reduction in there. We have blanks in the bill for now. Section 46. This was an amendment to Senator Chaudhry's Senate File 353, and deals with the sale of state lands. That was the money that was required. This is part of the state government budget bill from 2005 and amended in 2007 to be extended. That's the land that the department's been concerned about having to sell in quick order, or they would lose a big chunk of their fiscal year 2009 money. And what this does is it extends it out for 2 years, and this was a supplemental recommendation of the governor to extend this for 2 years. And then Section 47, as I mentioned earlier, that's the high-priority chemical reports. That was from Senator Scheid's bill, Senate File 225, and this includes the amendment the other night in committee basically extended that report or provided for a more elaborate report, if you can see in paragraph B on 50.8 for the Pollution Control Agency. Section 48, this was from Senator Saxhog's bill. It's on the floor right now. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but the score reporting bill that Senator Saxhog's, it's included here. And then Section 49 is a prohibition on reorganizing the Environmental Quality Board for 2 years without legislative approval. Section 50 is the repealer I mentioned earlier. Those are the mining fees that were enacted in session law just last year. And then so the new mining fees are spelled out in statute in this bill, so that repeals the session law mining fees, so they would take effect at the same time. So it would be the statutory mining fees that are in this bill. And Madam Chair, that's Article 1.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I'm just curious, on Section 49, what does that do again?
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, that would prohibit the Commissioner of Administration from reorganizing the Environmental Quality Board within another agency. They would have to stay put for the next 2 years,
That's the gentleman we're here and talked about.
Yes.
It just maintains the status quo.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
How do you want to handle amendments to just the language?
Well, I think we should go through everything
and
then do take amendments and discussion, just so we have the whole picture of the. That would be helpful. We notice there's a little glitch that we're missing Senator Prentner Solon's language, it seems. Should be in this article, I believe, for the greenhouse gas registry. It must have fallen out in between, because it was in the last version, I think.
Okay.
So we're getting copies of the language of the engrossed. So we'll just add that when we have that.
Okay.
So just wanted to mention that in case anyone's looking for that. All right. We can take questions on the language or just go to the spreadsheet next. Article 2. Excuse me. Let's do Article 2. Ms. Doyle, are you going to go through that? Mr. Mueller will.
Madam Chair, the document energy, it's Article 2 with a scribbled out 1 and 2 number 2 written into it. It's the energy article. This just carries the blank riders and appropriations for the Department of Public Utilities Commission and Department of Commerce. First page is all pretty much boilerplate language for Department of Commerce. Again, remember, we only fund part of the Department of Commerce in this budget division, just the telecommunications, the Office of Energy Security, and then on the next page, the TAM. Under Office of Energy Security, the language on lines 2.14 through the rest of the page on over to lines 3.15 are RDF appropriations. The lines 2.4 to 2.14 is just some standard language that we used 2 years ago where we take the RDF money and have it transferred to the Department of Commerce and put in a special revenue account, and then we appropriate it. And the new appropriations from the RDF fund would be on starting on lines 2.15. The first part there is dealing with the Senate File 2029, the Prettner Solon bill with the geothermal mapping. Lines 2.20 through 2.28 is from Senate File 1215, Senator Kubley. This is funding for the CERT program. Lines 2.29 through the next page, 3.3, is a grant for, this is a partnership that deals with the, works with the Green Jobs Task Force. And lines 3.4 and 3.5 is also some language dealing with, would add, use some RDF money for solar rebates. And this was done 2 years ago also. The next subdivision is the Telecommunication Access, Minnesota. Lines 3.8 to 3.21 is a base rider. That was in the governor. That's part of that we actually put in 2 years ago, and it's a continuation base rider from that. Lines 3.22 to 3.31 is two other riders using TAM funds from the Center REST Senate File 1600. Section 4 of the bill is from the bill from Senator Dibble using about allocating the REPI payments that we heard the other night.
Oh, got it.
Section 5 is from the Senator Anderson bill dealing with the Minnesota Green Enterprise Assistance, and bill we heard just the other day. Section 6 is from the governor's bill. This would allowing the Department of Commerce Office of Energy Security to fully assess their costs to all public utilities. There's a couple of sections in this bill for that.
Mr. Mueller, let me just point out that if you just go back to Section 5, that's my Green Enterprise Assistance. And that bill was heard subsequently in Senator Tomasoni's division, and we added a sentence based on our – so I just wanted to point that out. That requires that Senator Tomasoni and the committee had talked about to require collaboration with legislators and stakeholders as well. So that's, you'll see that on lines 421 to 423. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair, continuing on again, Section 6, 7, 8, and 9 are all from the governor's bill. These are all sections allowing the Office of Energy Security to fully assess their costs. And there's a general fund revenue increase that ties to this that we'll carry in the spreadsheet. Section 10 is a new grant program that would be using later on in the at the end of the, this article. It's repurposing some previous RDF appropriation that is being unused within the rural wind loan program and would be directed to this renewable energy grant program, Section 10. So that's some new language. And then we'll note on line 7.26, we have a maximum amount that we'll have to fill in here yet. Section 11, again, is from the Senator Dibble bill dealing with the REPI payments. This is just more some cleanup language that was in that bill. Section 12 is a study for the installation of solar panels on school building, a feasibility study and report. Section 13 is where we cancel and reappropriate some previous RDF appropriations that are basically going unspent. The first one is the any unencumbered balance of the previous appropriation for the Green Jobs Task Force is canceled and then reappropriated to the Commissioner of Deed. That refers back to Section
5
of the bill.
I should be 5.
Oh. Yeah, Section 5 of the bill. Then the Part B is the cancellation of the previous RDF appropriation. There was $2 million appropriated for a rural wind revolving loan program that we did 2 years ago that they've had a hard time getting that program going and off the ground and using the money. So it's whatever balance is left of that program would basically be reappropriated for the grant program then on Section 10. So that is the energy article.
Members, we'll hand out the spreadsheet to the to members and to the public. And in the meantime, are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I'm looking through here. We didn't take away any of the wind develop money, did we?
No, we did not. What we talked about with Senator Dibble was the language that's in here is the language that this committee agreed to the other night that says that that hydroelectric proposal that he was looking for is out of the $1.5 million, which does not go to wind, that goes to hydro and biogas. And so he, Senator Dibble's project would only be funded through that program. And we're going to add some language that puts a cap in that at $500,000 per year for a hydro project. But it doesn't affect any of the small wind programs. And then I had... We have that rural wind assistance program that I had passed a couple of years ago, and Mr. Mueller just mentioned that. And that, as he said, it didn't really get off the ground because it wasn't enough money to go out and buy lots of wind turbines in aggregate. And so we're just proposing in here, I put some language in that has that money available for instead for renewable energy manufacturing companies to get grants to help them get off the ground. So, it's, yeah, there's nothing that hurts wind.
I only say that because we don't have any water out where I live, but we got a lot of wind, though.
You got it. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, on line 7.1 and 7.2, as far as this green manufacturing
issue. Yeah, and
I
apologize. I just got the language. Otherwise, I would have.
Eligible business means an organization that is engaged in or will engage in the manufacture of renewable energy system parts or systems. Mm-hmm. Let's say we were be able to entice some wind energy, let's say blades. Let's say we got some company that wants to build, and we're doing that in Pipestone, I think, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we're able to attract another company that wants to build windmill blades in Minnesota. Would they be eligible for this?
Well, I would think so, as written.
I mean, I'm looking at.
And I'm thinking there's probably about $1 million to maybe $1.25 million left from this program that would be put into this grant program. So we don't really establish any kind of a maximum We haven't done that yet.
I'm just wondering, because we define renewable energy systems.
Yeah, the idea is that it would be for the component parts as well as the whole turbine.
But could it be for the blade construction is my question, mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, the mega project.
It
says parts or systems.
I would think so.
I'm not sure the language. Maybe Senate Counsel can help me, but I'm not sure the language would permit that.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Knopf.
Oh, Madam Chair, excuse me. Senator Brock, it does say parts or systems on 7.2.
Is there some other word you're thinking of that should be in here?
System.
Well, it seems like on 7.3 we define what a renewable energy system means.
Okay.
And I don't see where it would apply to.
Madam Chair.
Well, the system parts would include, would be the parts of the system. So it could include the blades or the gearboxes or the turbines, I would think.
I just want to make sure the language works, because I've been, I have had a couple conversations with a windmill blade manufacturer. New company, they'd be new project to Minnesota. And of course, in this environment, it's real hard to cobble any money together. So I was just wondering if there is an opportunity. I've been working with Deed on it. There's an opportunity for Deed to access some money at Commerce to help with the incentive. Just wanted to make sure that this language worked so that it would be eligible for a blade manufacturer.
That would be my intention, Senator Bakken. Ms. Doyle's nodding. She drafted this language, yes. That it would be eligible.
Is there
eligible.
A cap on what somebody can receive out of that?
Well, we haven't put it in yet. We got to figure it out. We need to determine exactly how much money is left in this program that we're repurposing. And I know this idea actually came to me from some solar manufacturers that are interested in opening up as well. And so we probably should we need to set a cap of some kind, but first we need to see how much money is in there. So
here's my reason for asking. A windmill, I've learned something about manufacturing windmill blades in the last couple months. And what I've learned is that it takes a building of about 300,000 square feet. And at $80 to $100 a square foot, that's around $24 to $30 million for the building. So I think if we really want to be serious about trying to entice a company that's going to manufacture, a major manufacturing facility, industry is big. Everything is big in heavy industry like manufacturing, and they require big buildings, especially if you're going to make 150-foot blades. $1 million doesn't go very far when it costs 24 to 30 to build a building. So I think we can all feel good if we put something in here and we put a $50,000 cap on what somebody can get. But the truth is, Minnesota is not competing for these kind of businesses. And we've had a lot of discussion the last 2 days in the tax committee about is Minnesota really making an effort to attract jobs to our state? Are we really trying? And I would argue, and have argued for 2 days in the tax committee, we are not. The creating jobs in Minnesota is not important enough that we're willing to put any real money into it.
Senator,
we all might want to do it, but so I was just wondering if it was eligible and what the criteria might be, but.
Well, Senator Bach, I could not agree with you more. I completely agree with you. And I should mention, you were presenting a bill in another committee when I was in your committee presenting my Green Job Zones proposal, which is also targeted towards that exact same idea. And this is all the money that we have available to try to start up this idea. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's really kind of a drop in the bucket compared to what other states are putting on the table to attract business development, especially in these green technologies, which is a really growing market that Minnesota has a lot of advantages in and a lot of opportunities in. So I would like to see a lot more money into this type of idea. I think we might have some vacant facilities in St. Paul, for example, that would be big enough to host some of those. I don't know if it has that square footage that you're mentioning, although there might be. And so that Green Job Zones proposal that I brought to your committee is all about, if you have a facility like that that's now sitting vacant, then we ought to put extra effort into just providing incentives to attract one of these companies to come and use a facility that's sitting vacant because there's been a company shut down, and, you know, it may have gone overseas or just whatever, for whatever reason, lost its ability to do business there. But we have an opportunity to reuse that facility, and we have a workforce that's ready to go and oftentimes could just use a little retraining to be put to work. So maybe we can work together on this between your committee and ours, but this is just sort of the idea, getting an idea started, because, as you said, it's really not enough money to attract a big, big company.
Well, Madam Chair, the interesting, and I talked with the developer again today, and when I initially met with him probably over a month ago now, I floated the idea of tax credits because that's what I have in the tax committee. And, you know, that's what the Job Z program is. And I never mentioned Job Z, but he said, I'm not interested in tax credits. He said, tax credits only help a business that's making money. He said, is it going to take me several years before this business ever gets into a situation where it will cash flow? He said, startup money is what I need. I don't need some future tax credits. I need to keep the business operating through the lean years when we're trying to develop it so that it actually makes money. So, and I know the governor has a passion about Minnesota's tax climate, but in dealing with this developer, he's not interested in tax credits. He's, like most Minnesota businesses, he's a pretty large employer, and he's hemorrhaging cash right now. And if he doesn't have tax liability, tax credits don't do him any good because he can't access them until he's profitable again. So I just think we as a legislature, and I reached out pretty hard to the Republican members of the Tax Committee yesterday, need to, in a bipartisan way, if we are serious about coming out of this recession and putting people back to work, we all have to check our partisan stripes at the door and get serious about it. And, I mean, I think this is a great effort. I think it's probably pretty minuscule compared to where we need to go. But I think all of us want to create jobs in this state and create some opportunity for people. And but we're making a feeble effort at best. And, you know, the governor's trying to do economic development. I argued with one hand tied behind his back, because you can't do economic development without money. That's what it takes. So that's what other states are doing. So I just wanted to express that to this committee. I think all of us, Republicans and Democrats and yourself, whatever label you want, we've had the state economist in the tax committee talk about the fact that we are not going to grow our way out of this problem. We are going to have to invest some money in this state if we are going to rebuild our economy. Think of all the parents who have kids that have been enrolled in college and next month are going to graduate. Think of the excitement of that, concluding your educational career with the hope of going out on your own. And those people, those young people this year are going to move home because there are no jobs for most of them. And I think we have a responsibility to do more. And we need to bipartisanly, I think, take the flag, because I think the governor has missed the boat on the jobs issue. So just wanted to express that, and I was hoping there'd be more money in this so that, you know, and we've heard a lot of testimony the last couple of days in the tax committee about what Wisconsin's doing, what Iowa's doing, and we are doing little or nothing in Minnesota, and we all should be concerned about that. So we're going to have some provisions in the tax bill this year that are geared towards economic development, and I hope that in the conference committee process we can engage the governor in that discussion and put some emphasis on creating economic opportunity for our people.
Senator,
anyway, I'm sure I hope I however big the number is, I'd like to make it bigger. So I haven't seen what the number is yet. But.
Well, Senator Bach, as you know, this bill is not where we're going to find the money to do much of anything. This is a budget-cutting bill to meet our target. And we're lucky we've got the ability to be a tiny bit creative with some small pots of money, but that's all we can do in this bill. And it's a start, and I think it's a good start because this is really an important subject. And, you know, remember a week ago we passed our stimulus budget out of for energy programs out of this committee, and that is going to provide thousands of jobs around Minnesota. I think I can safely say thousands. I know hundreds, and we're doing the very detailed jobs analysis right now, which I'll have when we present that bill on the floor. But that's going to have opportunities now for those kids graduating from college or high school. This June, there are going to be many, many jobs that we're funding with energy programs that we're supporting around the state. So there will be a lot of opportunity. But as we really honed in on during the Green Jobs Task Force discussions, where we have the gap still is in the manufacturing. I mean, we can get people to install these renewable energy systems. We can get people to retrofit buildings around the state. But we're not, and that will help to generate and support the manufacturing side of this. But we have done very, very little in our state to support that manufacturing base. And so I'd like to see us do more as well. I think it's critically important. And it's hard when you don't have much money to spend. Anyway. Mr. Knopf.
If Senator Box, we could clarify that a little bit. I thought of a way of doing that. If you wanted to clarify that it would be components of systems. I was thinking you could just delete system parts or on 7.2 and insert, and then after systems, insert or components for renewable energy systems. That might make it clearer that it's both the systems and the components that can be. Madam Chair, apparently there's another place to do that. We'd just make this comparable on 7.102. But I think it might be clearer if you said, because you've got a defined term, renewable energy systems, so you say renewable energy systems or components for renewable energy systems, so that it would be very clear that it would be the system or the component.
Madam Chair, I think that works
Senator
better,
Bob.
I think, with mm-hmm. what both of our intent would be.
I think that's a good suggestion, and it occurs to me, looking at this language, there's one other, I think, missing piece that I meant to include, and that is advanced storage technologies that complement these renewable technologies. And I know of a company that wants to open up shop right now that has small high-tech storage devices that would be compatible with wind or solar installations that would allow them to be so much more cost-effective, because you could store the energy for a period of time in an easy, small space in an affordable way. And they want to manufacture these storage devices in Minnesota as well. So it's another company, a manufacturing company that we really need to attract, because they fit in with these renewable energy systems. And I wonder if we could add
7.5
advanced storage.
Energy storage systems.
Advanced energy storage systems that. On 7.5 after the period.
After the comma.
Or after the comma.
And then insert, Madam Chair, advanced energy storage systems, comma.
Well, I think, yeah, that's fine. As long as they are connected to renewable energy systems, and they're part of that definition.
Right.
So I think that would work. So I'd like to include that as well. So we can incorporate that.
Madam
Senator Cooley?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I guess, the renewable energy storage systems are a relatively new technology, so how do you define advanced from any other form?
Well, I think we're not talking about a little 9-volt battery. We're talking about
Madam Chair, if you're looking at adopting smart grid technologies, I don't think you want to eliminate the 9-volt batteries either.
Okay. Well, what would you propose? Just energy storage systems?
Well, I'd just say any energy storage system, that could range from anything from a few kilowatts up to a few megawatts, or quite a number of megawatts. Because the, you know, the smart grid technology includes changes to the homeowner as well, where they can direct some of that themselves, and those storage packs would be significantly smaller.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to exclude small ones. I think we want all sizes. I think it, by advanced, I just meant, you know, the newer technology, not old technology for storage, because I think this is a – but whatever. I don't – energy storage
it's
systems
maybe
works
straining
for me.
At Nats, Madam Chair.
Yeah, and
Madam Chair,
we could take out advanced.
Or you could use the term emerging. That's the name of this program. It's the emerging renewable energy industry.
Uh-huh. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, maybe Council can tell me. I'm just wondering if my little geothermal project that I mentioned for Ely would somehow fit into the criteria here and be eligible for a $50,000 grant. What we have is underneath the city of Ely are a couple of old underground mines. The Pioneer Mine is one of them, and I can't remember the name of the other one. There is 2 billion gallons of water underneath the city of Ely in abandoned mine shafts. And they want, they're working on a study to see if they could do a geothermal proposal and pull that water out of the mines and use geothermal to heat their public buildings. And they're short, they've put together some private money, but they're $50,000 short for the balance of what they need to get the upfront study work done. I'm just wondering if a study is eligible for this grant.
Well, Ms. Doyle, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, I guess when I was drafting this, if you're manufacturing, if you filled out the grant application and you met the eligibility criteria, which would establish Minnesota as a center, leveraging other funds, you know, creating green jobs, I guess you could possibly qualify for the grant, but you'd also be competing against other grant applicants using these same criteria. So I guess that's what my answer would be to whether or not you would qualify.
Well, Ms. Doyle, my thought was if you look at line 7.20, if you said develop renewable energy technology activity in the state and took the word supplier out, then I think it might be more apt to be eligible. Develop renewable energy technology. I don't know quite why we need supplier.
Well, this is, Senator Bach, because this is intended for manufacturing
I understand.
Plants.
I'm trying to find a way to see if my study will fit.
Okay. Well,
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I don't think you'd quite be there yet if you look at the definition of eligible business. So
it's still not
really. Engage in the manufacture of renewable energy systems. And
that's why I'm asking, because I didn't think it quite fit yet.
Senator Bach, I have a feeling we could find a way, maybe not here, but somewhere in this, one of the other renewable development funds to make that. I don't know where it would quite fit, but I think there's a way.
Madam Chair, a constituent of mine is very, very passionate and spent a lot of time and energy on this idea, and his name is Steve Paragas. And he has really appealed to me to try and find him some way to find him $50,000 to further the idea in the city. So I'm just, anybody has any ideas?
Some extra money.
It's a pretty exciting project.
There may be enough in the fund to do that as a separate line item. I don't know. We'd have to check. But I think it's a great idea.
If we could, it's a pretty intriguing idea.
I don't know that it quite fits here. But I think we could try to make it, see if there's a way to fund it out of the Renewable Development Fund. Senator Frederickson.
Well, Madam Chair, if we're making changes to this document before it's offered, I'd like to go back to page 4 and
yes.
the sentence that was added in Senator Tomasoni's division.
Yes.
Line 21. I'm not sure who qualifies as a key legislator. So I would propose that we
you
ask
your
staff.
Name in there?
Yeah. Senator Bach. I would suggest that we ask staff to delete key legislators and ranking minority members and put in the usual phraseology of chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House of Representatives Committee with jurisdiction over green energy job programs.
Sounds good to me. And finance, green energy finance and policy.
There's a standard.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. This was a little bit done on the fly, so. That's appropriate. Would you allow staff to have the discretion to find that language?
The usual language.
The usual language, yeah. I think we know what you mean. That's a good suggestion. Senator Hahn?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we're kind of having this broad-ranging discussion, I want to go back to page 7 for a minute. And the criteria for awarding the grants, the eligibility criteria, and why would there not be, as a part of that criteria, determination made as to whether or not the particular grantee will have a business that is economically viable? I'm thinking of the 20-plus year experiment with the ethanol industry in this state, where we have done things to provide grants and other things that, absent those, that industry would never be economically viable. And it seems to me that if we're going to start a program to say we want businesses, we ought to have some expectation that they'd be able to stand without continued ongoing public subsidization. And yet that's not in the criteria. And I'm just, wondering, I mean, it seems like this proposal would be open for someone to come in, maybe as Senator Bach's talking about the big windmill blade manufacturers. They could come in. Maybe they'd get a $30 million grant. Maybe they put together a big program. Maybe they'd never sell a single blade. And I don't know. Maybe they'd come back the next year and say, we need another grant to expand the building. I just don't know if there's anything here that requires that these businesses actually become profitable, independent. And I think we ought to consider that.
Senator Hahn, I think that's an excellent suggestion. And I'm not sure exactly how to say it, but I think to say that there needs to be an evaluation. I mean, this is intended to support emerging businesses, startup businesses, or new businesses to our state. But there needs to be an evaluation whether they're, you know, viable proposals that have a good business plan and a likelihood of succeeding and a likelihood of becoming profitable over the long run. Absolutely. I would agree with all of those things. I think, you know, I wouldn't. By definition, they're applying for a state grant, so you don't want to say they can't be reliant on any state funds, but, you know.
Well, Madam Chair, and I think that is, there is a problem.
Viability as a business proposition seems like a very reasonable request
evaluated. Madam Chair, I think you're right. I think there is inherent problems in this because typically if you're going to start up a business, you may go to private investors and they maybe obtain some equity in the project, and then they have a stake in it, and they share the profits. And I don't think that's what we're proposing to do here. We're proposing to put money out there to encourage the development of a business or an industry, but there's no real stake that we have in terms of it's all sort of based on the hope that this is going to turn out. And if it doesn't, then the taxpayers are the ones that pay the cost. And I'm just wondering if council can help us with crafting some language that would put some limit on the ability for these grants to extend out indefinitely if it comes to pass that these businesses or programs are just not economically viable. In other words, so that we don't have the 20-year or 30-year or whatever number of year continuing renewal of the granting mechanism in order to keep the funding going, in order to sustain the investment that's already been made. At some point, you got to pull the plug. Maybe council's got some advice on language to do that.
Who wants to Senator Fredrickson?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, could I make a suggestion? On line 714, under the applications part, including a sentence or requirement that would state the applicant shall submit a business plan that demonstrates the financial viability of the business. Mm-hmm. Modification of that?
I think that's a good place to start. I would, I think it's not unreasonable to say that there needs to be some private investment in this proposal as well, that it's not, we're not going to fund any kind of a business with this $1 million pot of money anyway without having some private investors in it. But I think that's a good place to start. Maybe we should do that language and we can add to it, or we could require, you know, leveraging some private dollars as part of this.
It's already said.
Where does it say that?
Line 7.19.
Leverage.
Oh, yeah. Leverage both private funds and other public funds. Good. Okay.
Chair,
so let's.
I think we should ask staff to also look perhaps under the economic development statutes, because I think in other parts of law we have some provision about proprietary and disclosing proprietary information, mm-hmm. and other requests that the commissioner may make.
That's
Mr. Knuth?
Chair, Senator Frickson, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's going to be one of the issues with submitting a business plan, is that once it's submitted, it becomes public information unless it's otherwise stated as private. So,
well, they could still be required to maybe we don't want to call it their business plan, but to submit information verifying the financial viability and verifying that they have a business plan.
Well, and Madam Chair, but that is, in other parts of the law, there are parts of it that are carved out that are not public because
okay.
they're proprietary.
Right.
I see. Okay. So
the commissioner can make a determination if it's just, you know, a pipe dream or if it has a real possibility of becoming.
And Madam Chair, Senator Frickson, the way to deal with that might be just to cross-reference that for this so that we don't get involved in the whole data privacy issue.
Mm-hmm. So are we going to be able to do that now, to draft something like this now, or to allow staff to work on the language as we – well, we have to – members, we're doing a committee bill here where we're going to send this to the revisor's office, and they're going to introduce a bill. And so we could direct staff to put that language
right.
together that we hope will reflect the sentiment of the committee. Senator Saxon.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the last word. This is a great idea. This is obviously, and you've been one of the people that have been talking about it the longest. Energy jobs, green jobs are what we're looking for. And this little bit of money here and the criteria are fine, but I do think that it's what we're looking for is a bigger idea and a bigger jobs bill, and something we ought to be looking at mm-hmm. when we get some money.
Yes.
But, you know, the pro forma and how we're going to put it all together, I think we need some work on that before we're going to put it in a bill and talk about whether it's whether it's the due diligence or what we're going to do with our economic development statutes or whatever. But good start.
Great. All right. Well, we'll direct staff then to try to tighten this up a little bit and reflect the comments that have been made by the various senators. I think we can do that. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I had a question on Article 1, page 19. Wasn't sure what there was a couple, three there. I don't know if they all relate to off-highway vehicles or not. Some of it's for time, but I'm not for officers. I'm not sure.
This is all base rider previously used language in previous years.
All right. So what is – I guess maybe the department could answer it better. County that has a high concentration of off-highway vehicle use.
Can you just say what line you're on?
That would be 19 – basically the sentence 19.5 through 19.10, and then the – 19.13 paragraph, and on the next page, 20.3 paragraph. Is the department
well,
here?
Well, let's ask Mr. Knopf to explain it. I don't know that we need testimony to hear that out.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, this is identical language to what was in the bill in 2007. Both all of these riders that you're seeing, the overtime language, that's actually been carried since the 1980s, I think. And then the off-highway, one is the grants to the local law enforcement. The other one is from your bill on 19.22. That's the grants for the groups to monitor trails and public lands. That was from your bill from 2 years ago.
Okay.
And then the language on 20.3, that was, again, was language that was enacted as part of this budget bill in 2007.
Okay.
Is,
Are there any, I guess on that question, then, is all the rider language, Mr. Knopf, previous rider language in Article 1?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, no, I went through that earlier and pointed out which ones were base riders and which ones are new. Mix of things. There are some new interspersed with. Most of them are base riders.
Could you name a couple of those again?
A couple of
the ones that are new?
Well, Senator Chaudhary, he went through the whole bill, and they're all interspersed in this 50-page document. Are you asking him to go? I don't want him to go through the whole thing again.
I asked him to name a couple of them.
Just random ones or any particular ones?
Perhaps some of the more significant ones.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll just go through and name a few here. Page 3, lines 3.19 to 3.22, that's a continuation from last year on the permit fee revenue. There's another one in air like that. You have on page 6, lines 6.10 to 6.29, those are from Senator Sieben's bill on the composting grant program. You have Senator Scheid's on the bottom of page 6. You have, let me see if there's anything else that's significant that you might be interested in. We have Senator Bach's language on page 14 on the C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail. You already heard that. I don't think there's anything real significant in these riders. They're basically, most of them are base riders. It's a few places. There's one that you probably, if you weren't around when we went through this, in Ecological Services on page 17, the bottom of page 17, on 17.34, the commissioner shall establish a stakeholder process to solicit input on the strategic direction of program delivery and so on. And that basically gets at that whole water and ecological services merger. And then the sentence below that says that unless expressly authorized by law, the commissioner shall not merge that prior to July 1, 2011. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one new one that you hadn't seen before that's of interest. But otherwise, I would say they're basically base riders.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, on that idea of prohibiting the commissioner from doing mergers, shouldn't we be trying to allow them to create some efficiencies within their departments? I mean, I'm confused. I know they've spent some time and money on the idea of consolidating some divisions over there at DNR, and I'm just wondering why we would tell them to stop doing that. Earlier, I think we talked about trying to find some efficiencies in the way we deliver things to, from a state standpoint. I'm just wondering why we'd put a prohibition on
that.
Well,
Senator Bach, just in this particular case, they told us they wanted to merge these two divisions, and it created a lot of concern and discomfort among a lot of stakeholders because of these particular divisions and what their traditional roles have been and their traditional focuses. And we had testimony on that, and that's why, I mean, I understand the DNR doesn't like this language, and we can certainly continue the discussion, but that's why I proposed language that would require a stakeholder process. And I think what they've told me is that Commissioner Holston spent some time talking with me about this week, and they've just proposed it publicly fairly recently, and they've indicated they intend to have a stakeholder discussions, but I don't think that's really started, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't think that's really started yet. And so we wanted to make sure that process occurred, and hopefully they can work it all out and get everybody to come up with a plan that folks can support. But right now, there's a lot of groups that are not supportive and concerned about what it would do to the mission of the different divisions. So, I think it makes sense to continue the discussion before we just say, fine, go ahead.
Well,
And it's not about efficiency. I mean, they've never indicated this was for the purpose of efficiencies. This is for the purpose of changing how they do business in those two divisions substantively. And so this isn't proposed as a money-saving idea. If it were, we might look at it differently. But that's not the purpose of the
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy can tell you a very good story. a DNR story about a culvert that he wanted to put in on his farm. And I don't remember exactly how it goes, but apparently the divisions over there in the building don't talk to each other. And it took him just an unreasonable period of time between the different divisions to allow him to put the culvert in, to put a new entrance to a field. And it was because the divisions in the department weren't talking to each other. And I've heard that a lot, and he's got a great story, and we should ask him about it publicly sometime. But, I mean, I'm just concerned. There's going to be serious cuts, I mean, all across state departments. And somehow I think we need to make sure that they have flexibility to address that so that we don't end up with more people laid off than need be. And I mean, specifically as it relates to the overtime rider that's in here, you know, we're cutting about, I think it was $430,000 for the biennium out of the enforcement budget. But then we're putting a rider in saying you have to continue to pay unemployment to the enforcement people you have. Well, that's like mandating layoffs. It's just like us mandating you can't cut the overtime that enforcement people get, but we're going to cut $430,000 from you. The department has no option but to lay people off. We're just totally tying their hands, and that means there's going to be vacant enforcement stations out there. Well, other stations are going to continue to get overtime. I mean, I've always supported the historical overtime provision, but in this environment where we're making cuts to the division, we're mandating layoffs at the same time that other COs are going to be getting overtime, and some stations are going to go unfilled. I mean, so I just would hope that we give the department some flexibility that they can kind of shuffle the deck over there and deliver the things I think that we want them to deliver. Maybe a little less of everything, but at least maintain some flexibility. And to the extent we put riders on telling them they can't do things, I think that reduces their flexibility to respond to what is certainly going to be less money. And my understanding of the budget situation is, and you all know that last Friday we got the numbers on the February-March revenue, and it's down $46 million below the forecast. This economy is clearly still going south, and we're going to resolve a budget, I hope, in May, and when we go home, things are going to continue to get worse. And I don't know if the governor is going to call us back to address that or if he's simply going to start unallotting things. And we have no control over that. Governor Quay made a decision in 81 and 82 to call the legislature back as the economy continued to get worse. Wouldn't have had to have done that. Simply could have gone the unallotment route. And I don't know what this governor is going to do, but clearly things are going to get worse. And I think we need to make sure that all of the departments have some flexibility in the event the governor doesn't want to call a special session and there are further reductions to the state departments. I think putting riders in that tell them that they prohibit them from doing things, I think creates a real problem for delivery of services down the road and programs. But
Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, I agree with Senator Bach, but I'm just wondering, are we ready for another subject, or? I want to change the subject.
Yeah, go for it. You're a free agent.
I want to talk feedlots.
Oh, never mind. No, you can't. What page are you on?
Let's go to page 41. 41 and 42, there's some information, guidelines, direction to reimburse our feedlot officers in the various counties that have taken over the program in a formula that's laid out here. And I don't remember seeing this in any bill. I'm just wondering, where did it come from? And maybe it wasn't in a bill and I just missed it.
Mr. Knopf can explain that. He already did explain it once, but that's all right.
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, this is 2 years ago when the legislature appropriated money for this program. It referenced a 2005 law that to follow for giving out these grants. At the suggestion of Mr. Watson, and actually this is really his handiwork, that we should probably codify that rather than continuing to reference a 2005 law every other year for the county feedlot grant program, that if it's in statute, it's just more easily accessible to people. So this language has been enacted time and time again, basically, for this program. I think the major revision, if I remember right, well, I think it was in 2005. And then 2 years ago, the legislature just chose to cross-reference that 2005 law. So this just basically takes the language from the 2005 law that we've been operating under for the last 4 years and puts it in statute.
Well, Madam Chair, you're right. He has explained it already.
It's not ringing a bell. That's all right. There's a lot here. And it is, we do have kind of a goofy system where we always have all the language we've always had, and it always, it reappears mixed in with the new language. And it's kind of a confusing system. So that's what that is. And maybe that's all you needed to say about that, Senator Dill, or did you have any concerns
beyond that? I think that's it. As he was explaining it, I did jog my memory, and sure. I realized that he just got done saying that a few minutes ago.
And then it's the same thing with that overtime language, and I'm just going and looking at it. This is just something we've always done, I think Mr. Knopf said, since the 1980s, and it does. I see that it does reference reducing funding. If funding is reduced because of an allotment, it gives them the ability to make pro rata reductions in overtime. And it probably makes sense for us to say something about budget cut reductions. You know, that might be appropriate to modify that. I do want to say I feel pretty strongly about the merger and that I'm not comfortable with it at this point, and I've heard that concern from a lot of other people. So
you
I'm
feel
not really
you
interested
feel strongly
in changing
about
that.
You feel as strongly about the historical overtime rider?
Well, I was going to say I hadn't. That's just put in here like all these other riders. So that's certainly something we can talk about if you think it needs some. We need to adjust it. Senator Fredrickson had his hand up,
I'll
and then
pass.
Senator Chaudhry. Senator Chaudhry.
So on that overtime, maybe Mr. Knopf can help wordsmith it. Is there a way that it could be crafted that we could blink it off for this biennium, then it automatically blinks back on next biennium? So we, so for this biennium only, we could suspend the mandatory, that overtime language. But then they wouldn't have to come back and fight for it again next biennium. We would review the mandatory overtime given our budget situation. So I guess you would look at one or two of those lines in that paragraph and repeal them, but then the repeal would sunset.
That's a possibility. Mr. Knopf?
Just one thought.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, if you're talking about the overtime, right?
Right.
Yes.
And you, if you don't want that to happen, you wouldn't include it in the bill. If you don't want it to happen during this biennium, then the COs would probably lobby you to put it back in 2 years from now, or you actually may hear from them after you left the room today.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf, that's what I was trying to avoid, for them to have to lobby to put it back in. We just sunset it so it's suspended for 2 years, and then they don't have to come back. For it to be reinserted.
Since it's a session law, that's a difficult thing to do because you'd basically not include it. I mean, you could say during the current biennium overtime does not need to be distributed to conservation at historical levels. I mean, you could say something like that and leave a rider in here that says that.
But we could just cross it out.
Or you could just cross it out. The other thing you could do if you wanted to get at the whole budget reduction, you could. It says on 19.18, it says it's reduced because of an unallotment. You could say because of an unallotment or budget reduction, the overtime may be reduced in proportion.
Let's ask Mr. Meyer if he has
Madam
any Chair suggestions.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We're going to be really brief. I have Carol Conrad with me as well. We do appreciate having this in here at this time. This language was not in the governor's budget, unfortunately, because we cannot afford historical levels of overtime. Overtime has been, is, and always will be a critical component to the enforcement division. Because of working on holidays, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, we need to have people out. But if you look at the police state aid, the buying power of our police state aid appropriations, the increase in that we've received for state retirement costs and the enforcement negotiations on their contracts the past 2 years, and where we're at right now, we just can't afford this historical level overtime. If this language would be in there, The historical level, based on a seven-year average right now, is $1.8 million. And Senator Bach is exactly right. This would force us to pay overtime to certain officers while keeping vacancies, increasing vacancies, and perhaps bringing layoffs to the division at the sake of other individuals. So if you have specific questions about field stations, Colonel Conrad is here to answer those as well.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Senator Chaudhry.
Yes, Madam Chair. So then, Mr. Meyer, if we were to leave this language in, couldn't the department get that $1.8 million from police state aid?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, police state aid is a capped amount. It's a Minnesota statute 69.021, where we certify the number of officers we have. There's X amount in the fund. We put in number of employees. We get X amount back. The buying power of that dollar has severely decreased because of our increases in operational costs because of contractual negotiations. So we get a small percentage of police state aid. It goes to all the local units of government. It goes to St. Paul, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, or it goes to every fire department, our police department that's out there, I should say. So we're seeing, well, we're getting the same amount. It's a smaller and smaller part of our budget. So because of those negotiated contracts, increases in retirement, increases in severance, and increases in actual wages that we never received an increase in our allocation for, our costs are going like this, our appropriations are going like this, and now you're saying to continue with overtime at a historical level. We need to maintain our field stations where we need. We need to have the ability to pay overtime when we have to or where we can. If this clamps us down, I believe it will force us to go from 17 vacancies to probably 29 vacant field stations in the biennium, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you for that information. I don't think we want to do that. Is there anyone here from the union? Okay. I don't think there is, but I just thought I'd check. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, the other thing you could do is just change on line 1913, change must to may.
That would work. I mean, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know if it.
Doesn't do anything.
I'm open to suggestion. I think it might be actually wise to just take this language out this year. You know, nothing's going to prevent us from putting it in 2 years. That's what we always do as chairs. We always do that. I know you always did that, Senator Bach. And
I did.
We just sort of routinely do this. And I don't like, you know, just making an arbitrary decision without the union being here. But I think we're in extraordinary times, and nobody wants what is in this language to cause layoffs. So we have a big problem in front of us. Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, on your suggestion of changing must to may, take a look at also then deleting on 14 through 16, deleting however a reasonable reduction or addition may be made to the officer's allocation. So it would just say overtime may be distributed to conservation officers at historical levels if justified based on a individual officer's workload.
I think you're better off to leave it. You're better off just leaving it rather than that meeting out.
Well, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, if I represented the COs union, I would rather have nothing in here than some watered down language that I'm going to have to fight off 2 years from now.
Right.
If I was them, they're going to come back here 2 years from now and have to fight over which historical overtime language they're going to get. And they're not going to like this one, because I don't think with me in there it means anything.
So, Madam Chair, Senator
Bach,
are you saying then, based on your experience, it will be easier in 2 years to bring this original language back if we just delete the entire section now?
But as somebody who's negotiated some union agreements, sometimes it's better to take nothing than a watered-down version that you never quit fighting over going forward. All right.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, we really appreciate this discussion. Overtime is going to be part of our conservation officer complement. It just has to be because of the nature of their work. We just can't afford the historical level right now. So rest assured to all of the members here that we will be providing funding at some type of historic level. It's not going to be where we're at. It's going to be more manageable for the department to make sure that we have the forces on the ground to deal with the issues that are at hand. So while we do really appreciate this discussion today, and I do appreciate your understanding of the position we're at, I think Senator Bach is in the right position on this.
Senator Chaudhry.
One more observation, Madam Chair. If we take out the entire section, then there will no longer be the authorization to reduce the overtime bank in case of an unallotment.
But there won't be any mandate that right. there needs to be an exception to. So I don't think it won't apply. There won't be any limitation. They'll be able to just negotiate it and do what they can do already. So I don't think the language is necessary. So does anyone want to make a motion to? Well, we're not voting. We're discussing the language. So I think we don't have to vote on it.
Let me just say, I am really concerned about the idea. I have no reason to think Mr. Meyer is not telling us what we could likely see. The idea of 12 vacant stations, in addition to the 17 we have today, seems pretty extreme to have that many stations vacant with nobody in them. But I understand the situation they're in with the budget cuts. I mean,
this hasn't been adopted.
I mean, absent the whole thing that 12 additional people will lose their jobs, you've got the issue of those now are areas of the state that have no game and fish enforcement in them anymore.
We can actually wait.
Maybe you should adopt that if you actually so want. We could move incorporating all the changes we discussed.
Yeah. But if you have an actual amendment, you want to have it. You should take a license. Your amendment. So we need to have a document. So why don't we move to do what we've discussed so far? Yeah, I think we're just not going to include this right here.
19.
Thank you very much. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, we've talked about some changes that staff has recommended to us, and I think perhaps there are a couple other formal amendments coming a little later. I think perhaps we should move to adopt, put these documents on the table. So,
yes.
Madam Chair, I would move Article 1B and Article 2C to be adopted with the changes that we have discussed with staff, and that become our working document, have it on the table before us formally.
So Senator Fredrickson's motion is to put the language in front of us, including all the changes that we've discussed up till now, which would include this rider not being in the in the language, unless somebody wants to object. So let's get that in front of us, and then we can, because we are going to need to take some official amendments and take votes, and we need something in front of us to amend. So Senator Fredrickson moves to moves the language in Articles 1 and no, A and B. 1 and 2. A and B and C. 1B and 2C as modified by our committee discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion fails. All right. Any further discussion or amendments on the language? Or should we can proceed to the spreadsheet unless you have other
Madam
language.
Madam Chair, I do have an A2 amendment, and it's to first part of it is to page 43, and this is to the bill on chemicals of high concern that Senator Scheid has been working on. And I have talked with Senator Scheid. She is supportive of this amendment. Very briefly, it deletes Section 37 from the bill. And that includes a long list of agencies, some including foreign, European, Parliament, California, and State of Washington. And it deletes another few lines on page 45 of Section 38. Then on page 50, changes evaluating to prioritizing, and they want to change that because there will literally be many hundreds of chemicals that they may be looking at. We want them to look at the ones that are of high priority and changes the date of a report from 2010 to 2011.
All right, is that, that's the amendment then?
That's the amendment.
All right, is there, has everyone had a chance to review the amendment? And let's see if there's any questions or comments. I wonder if Senator Scheid had a chance to discuss this with any of the advocates for the bill. I don't really want to take testimony, but I just want to know if they've seen it. No? Unfortunate.
I just want the signs to say Rams. Didn't want them to advertise it as Rams.
Can we have copies?
Yeah.
Well, can you give her one? Give her yours. She has it. She doesn't even have it.
So that.
I didn't have any copies.
Oh, we didn't have any.
I didn't make 100. I only made like 50.
Oh.
So some people. I think so. I definitely need.
No one in the audience?
Well, there are at least 40 there.
20 to the audience. Okay. So a few. So this takes out the whole process of listing a register, creating a registry.
So what's
and an official list? It'll still designate chemicals of high concern or priority chemicals and chemicals of high concern?
Madam Chair, as I understand what's left, it will. That's part of the definition. We didn't change. This amendment did not change the definition.
Madam Chair, I can't hear the discussion.
Senator Fredrickson, could you repeat that, please?
Well, Madam Chair, the chemicals of high concern is still defined in the bill, and I believe it remains in parts of the remaining sections. Part that's changed is Section 37. That's the major change.
So it doesn't publish a list of chemicals of high concern?
It doesn't immediately publish a list of chemicals.
So what's the point?
Senator Rummel?
Madam Chair, I don't understand what's the point if we don't have the list published.
Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, on Section 38 still designates the chemicals of high concern.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Doyle.
Madam Chair, members, I was just going to say, I think what the intent of this amendment is to have the Department of Health and the PCA do this report back, and that will kind of explain how they're going to do what their findings are to now regarding the prioritization. It's really, we've really fleshed out these two reports, and so I think that's sort of the intent here, is to keep going on the process, but these reports will really provide the direction they want to go in towards publishing the list of chemicals of high concern. That's my understanding.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, any further discussion on Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Council, could you help me understand what the problem was with the first part, Section 37? Why they...
Madam Chair and Senator Rummel, it's my understanding that the two factions have come together and determined that perhaps this identification of the chemicals of high concern, it was just too quick to have them perhaps publish it by January 15th, 2010, and that they want to take some more time to do these reports. And now I'm not sure if this would affect the fiscal note we have, because there was quite a bit of cost, and maybe that involved some of this process. But that's my understanding, is this kind of was a negotiation, perhaps just getting some more time and getting these reports back.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess we don't know for sure whether this would affect the cost. We'll have to determine that. Senator Dale.
Oh, Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, where did this amendment come from and who negotiated or what? Ms. Doyle is talking about some kind of an agreement here. What could you shed some more light on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Dale, Senator Scheid was involved with that, and I believe in those negotiations. I talked with her before I came in here, and also I believe some other representatives were involved in the discussion too. Some from the industry.
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres Ray.
I think it would be very helpful to me because I would like to hear, if you don't mind, just briefly from people, very briefly, that work on this, because I know that extensive work went into this because they really want to have these reports so that we can continue to work on policy proposals. So I think it would be very beneficial for me. I don't think that we should take this language out, but I'm not absolutely clear. So if you don't mind, I would like to have a minute.
Senator Torres Ray, I think that's fair just to give them a minute just to respond if they could. Ms. Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. My name is Lindsay Dahl, and I'm with Healthy Legacy. And I actually haven't seen this language, and someone's running to get Senator Scheid right now. So she has not shown us this language, and I would strongly encourage you to vote against the amendment as it stands. Unfortunately, I wish I would have seen this beforehand, but I think it substantially takes away from the focus of the bill, and it's really important to keep those pieces in there for the notion of moving forward in a way to address toxic chemicals in children's products. Thank you.
Is this posted? What do you gain? Just give us sort of a short version. What do you gain from publishing this list specifically?
I think the important part about publishing the list is really the fact that we need to know more information about which chemicals are in our children's products. And so publishing it makes it public and moves us in that direction of alerting consumers so they have information about some of the bad stuff that could be there.
So it does seem that if you take this out, there won't be any public information until we take a further step. Maybe that would come later. But Senator Rummel.
I guess, Madam Chair, as I said the other day when we heard the bill in committee, the bill has been negotiated down significantly from where it started. A tremendous amount of negotiation went on. We're always kicking this issue down the road, and I think people have had plenty of warning that we've got to start. I believe it was the Mr.
Sandusky.
At a seminar we were at recently, said to us that TSCA doesn't work, and it's time to start doing something that works for our children. So I would like to keep the language in.
Okay. Well, I think, thank you, Ms. Dahl, very much. I think Senator Scheid is coming. I think presumably she negotiated this with some of the folks who had concerns about the bill. And so maybe we should, we think she's on her way? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll give Senator Scheid the courtesy to speak for a moment. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment that doesn't affected by the spreadsheet, an A1 amendment, if you want to work on that for a second.
Yeah, while did you move this? Okay. Thank you, Senator Frederickson. Senator Saxhog, let's set this aside for just a minute.
Does everybody have the A1, or it's coming out? Okay.
It's coming around. You can start talking about it.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. What the A1 amendment is it would be Section 50 and would go on page 51, right below line 20. It would ask the Commission of the Pollution Control Agency to submit a report to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committees by January 15, 2010. The report would include options to reduce time required to complete environmental review and cost of the process to responsible government units and projects. And I think we're all concerned in the the environment here, trying to get environmental reviews and permitting done that we're doing in the most efficient way. So I would move the A1 amendment.
Thank you.
Take questions.
Senator Saxhog. And I think this is a good idea, as I think all of us have heard concerns about the lack of timely results on permitting. And I think this strikes the right balance in just getting some, having a discussion, coming up with ideas while making sure that we, you know, bring it back for further discussion about how to achieve that balance. Senator Scheid, we'll bring you up in just a moment. Thank you. Between trying to get better results but maintaining our environmental standards. And as we talk about the idea of increasing permit fees, this should be part of that discussion as well, I think. So I think it's a good
idea. If they're going to pay more money, they need to
get some results.
Get some results for the money.
Senator Chaudhry.
Yes, Madam Chair. The Policy Committee did hear this and approved of it. Question I had, Senator Saxhog, on line 12, would you be amenable to adding or improving after maintaining?
Yeah, I would take as an oral amendment.
Senator Saxhog can incorporate that into his amendment. I think that's a good suggestion, Senator Chaudhry. So Senator Chaudhry is adding, after maintaining, insert or improving on line 12, 1.12. Maintaining or improving air, land, and water quality standards. Any other comments, discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Scheid. Do you need a minute? Senator Scheid, would you like to talk to us for just a moment?
Madam Chair, yes, I.
About the amendment that Senator Fredrickson's offered.
Right. And Senator Fredrickson told me that he was going to offer an amendment. I don't love the amendment, but, and it's up to the committee. I said, though, the other day that I still had some concern about the specificity of Section 2, and I assume that's what Section 37 mm-hmm. is what you're deleting, is what...
It's the registry that would post...
Chair, the listing of all the different mm-hmm. organizations that they could consult with. And I don't...
But it's also the posting.
You know, I thought we kind of addressed that with some language saying that they didn't have to look at each one. So I don't know why that would be problematic anymore. I don't have the
Section
37. Right. Okay, that would be... My thank you. So, you know, I'd like to leave 37. I think that page 45. The identifying then the language that's page 45, delete lines 7 to 13. The other things are just technical, I think. Lines 3, 4, and 5 of the amendment. Lines 7 to 13. I don't know that does terrible damage, because I can understand that if another state prohibits the sale or use of a chemical or a product containing it, I guess just that alone probably shouldn't. I mean, it would make me look twice. It would make me, as a scientist, want to know why they did that. But just the fact that they did prohibit the sale in another state isn't necessarily. So,
where are you?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm on page 45. The amendment. I mean, well, it's not of the amendment.
Oh,
page 45,
I see.
The amendment. Delete lines 7 to 13.
Got it.
I don't think there's a problem with the rest of the amendment. I understand. I think that I don't know, did the PCA testify?
We're trying not to take a lot of testimony.
I understood that they prefer the 2011 for that report. And I understand that, and I think that we want this to work for the departments, you know, the agency and the department, so I'm fine with that. So, you know, I...
So you're, Senator Scheidt, I think I hear you saying, I know you haven't had much time to look at this, that lines 1.6 and beyond you're comfortable with?
1.3 and beyond.
I think I can live
with 1.3 and beyond, but that right. 1.2, the deletion of Section 37, you'd prefer not to do?
That's correct.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I would reoffer the A2 amendment, but not 1.2.
Okay. So Senator Fredrickson moves lines
1.3
to 11 of the A2 amendment. Okay. And does everyone understand that motion? Any discussion on that motion?
The register is out.
I'll give you members just a moment to make sure you are tracking it. Senator Torres Ray.
Just a question. Senator Scheidt, in the amendment deleting on page 45, if we delete 7 to 13, you spoke about, you know, subdivision 5, which makes sense, but I believe that... B, which is publishing the priority, the list of priority chemicals, is something that we would like to keep, I believe.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheidt.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres Ray, I understand that. I think maybe a date could be reworked because we're looking at the 8th. Well, the department's report is 2010.
On January 15th, and then they're going to publish that 2 weeks later.
I think that this is a report back to the legislature. I think that might be premature by that date to have these things published. But I think at the end of the day, that is certainly what we'd like. You know, so it's maybe it's the date that's problematic.
Yeah. But Madam Chair, I believe that you want to keep that language of in the bill. I think maybe you want to change the date. Or July 2011, so that gives you 6 more months. Will be the end of the session, if that is. But I assume that you want to keep that language.
Madam Chair,
Senator Scheidt.
Madam Chair, I appreciate Senator Torres Ray drawing my attention to B. I was kind of looking at, you know, parens 4 and 5, and I realized that B is a paragraph unto itself, and we do want that list. I think the date is something that perhaps the department could weigh in on at some point between now and the time you're in conference committee, I suppose. Because the date is problematic if it stays at February 2011.
It is.
But I don't know if the proper date would be 2012 or, as Senator Torres Ray says, 6 months later.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to modify the amendment on page line 6 of the amendment, delete 13 and insert 10.
Okay.
And on line 11, delete 2011 and insert 2012.
On line 11?
Line 8.
In the register.
Line 8, delete 2000
no.
and.
No,
that's the report.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, I think on line 45.11, right. On page 45, maybe we could change that to either July 1, 2011, or January 15, 2012. That's the date we were talking about, perhaps changing. And then also on the amendment, we would need to, if we're going to be doing this amendment, get rid of line 1.3 on the amendment and...
right.
Yeah, just line 1.3.
Yep. Okay, so, all right. I think, Senator Fredrickson, do you want to pick a date for 45?
Madam Chair, January 15th, 2012.
Okay. So I think, just to restate the amendment, would be you would move lines 4, 5, 6, with the modification of 13 to 10, and then the remainder of the amendment are 7, 8, and 9, 10, and 11, and then on 45.11, change February 1st, 2011 to January 15th, 2012.
Madam Chair, right.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I know you don't want to drag this out, but I'm just curious on page 45.7 and 8. What is a high production volume chemical?
Ms. Dahl.
It's, I think, off the top of my head, it's a chemical that's produced at over 1 million pounds per year. And so it would significantly narrow the focus to, it's about 3,000 chemicals that are HPV chemicals.
So part of this list is really to help us, instead of looking at the hundreds of thousands of chemicals out there, each one of these narrows the list of the types of chemicals we would be looking at. So eventually, we're looking at just a very small number. And so I think by eliminating number 4 and number 5 here, we have kind of spoiled the whole point of focusing in on the lowest hanging fruit and the most easy to access information. So I would like to retain numbers 4 and 5 at least.
So, Senator Rummel, I think this would actually make the list shorter if we keep these in.
That's right.
I think that's what you're saying, that it would actually be fewer chemicals that would be on the list.
Fewer to look at, fewer to think about. I think it's a mistake to take those out, because what we want to do is make this manageable.
Madam Chair and
Senator
Frederickson, if I may, what I would like to suggest is that we adopt this entire amendment without line 1-2 and 1-6. That way, you really keep the substance. Because you see, those two are really critical to this bill. And so if we do everything else, which is maintain 1-2 and 1-6, out of the amendment, then we'll be okay. So everything in the amendment without 1-2 and 1-6.
Along with the date change. Yeah. Senator Frederickson, what do you think?
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, whatever Senator Scheid wants to do.
Let's hear what she says. Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I really do not like lines 9 and 10 because I don't think they should designate something a priority chemical just because another state didn't allow that product. They're going to know because they're consulting with the other lists and what other states are doing. They're going to know why. But it would be because they've made some kind of an independent judgment that the reason it was done is the reason we should do it. In other words, because all by itself, it just could exist all by itself. They could call it a priority chemical if they find that it's been prohibited in another state. That doesn't make good sense to me. I think that certainly raises a red flag to me if another state prohibits the sale or the use of a chemical, but I would want them to know more than just that. So
Senator Scheid, you like keeping the high production volume chemical.
Well, I understand.
Paragraph 4.
I understand what you're saying, helping winnow down.
Sure,
list. I understand Senator Rummel's point.
But you'd be okay with deleting paragraph 5, or you'd prefer to delete that paragraph, lines 45.9 to 45.10. Just want to make sure. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We discussed this particular provision in the policy committee. If you remember, this list is not a mandatory list of chemical listing. You have to go to the beginning of the paragraph where it says the department merely may designate a chemical of high concern if the department finds one of these things. So it's not a mandatory thing at all. And so I mean, and we did have this discussion. I remember Senator Dill was asking this question as well. But if a chemical has been prohibited in another state, I don't see why it shouldn't be considered by the department as part of the list. And that's the only thing this paragraph is saying. I agree. If it said, if it's been found in another state, it shall be on ours, I'd agree with you. That's a little too prescriptive without actually understanding the product. But this is only an option as part of the overall consideration.
Senator Shy.
Thank you, Senator Shy, for taking me back to the May.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Where are we? Senator Fredrickson.
Senator Shy, you would like to leave lines 7 through 10 in the... And Chair, Senator Scheid, you would like to leave on page 45, lines 7 through 10 in the bill.
Madam Chair, yes, but then lines 11, 12, and 13 are important as well.
Right.
But I think the date was the issue there.
Okay.
So Madam Chair,
Senator Fredrickson,
I would remove line 6 from the amendment also.
One through
okay.
six.
1.6.
1 through 6.
1 through 6.
Oh, what about 45 line 4?
You don't need
4.
Any of that. That's all related that,
that's
to
related
that.
To the other parts.
To the other parts. That's just technical.
And
just
Madam Chair, that I would
things.
Leave the change of the
that's
date.
That's all we need to do.
And then
and the balance of the amendment.
And then the balance would be lines 1.7 onward.
Right.
Plus the change of the date on 45.11. All right. I think we've reached somewhat of a meeting of the minds. That's great. All right. Does everyone understand the amendment proposed by Senator Fredrickson? Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. Maybe Council can shed some light on this. But on page, that same section, page 45, actually section 39, line, it's 45.16. It says the requirements of sections 116.9401 to 116.9407 do not apply. And I've been trying to find where sections 116.9404, 405, 406, and 407 are. And I don't find them in current law, and my recollection is that this bill, when it was standalone, was longer than it is here. Is there something that needs to be changed with that, or am I missing something here in the bill?
Ms. Doyle.
Madam Chair, I think that's just a technical change. I would be caught in the revisor's office. This was all new, proposed new coding, and just probably through engrossing hasn't, the sections haven't changed yet, but this is all proposed new coding, so it's referring to this. These new sections.
So, Madam Chair,
so, Senator Hannon,
so then really what we're saying is the requirement of sections 9401 to 9403 don't apply. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we've got 9401 on page 42, 9402 on page 43, 9403. And is there another section somewhere?
Well, that's, Madam Chair, that was my question.
So, I thought there was one more section in here somewhere. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, but that's not codified.
Yep. Madam Chair, I think what you want to do is just change 9407 to 9403.
Okay.
We'll take care of Senator Hand's concern.
All right. Senator Hand, do you want to just make that motion and save the reviser a lot of work?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that. I'd also like to incorporate on line 45.15 make that 9404 instead of 9408. I suppose that's just... yes. Going to be done as a matter of course anyway, but I'll just do that.
On page 46, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Shy.
Probably 9409 and 9410.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Madam Chair, the reviser will change all okay. these, or I will make sure that all these references are changed.
All right.
Is that all right?
That's fine. If the motion is not needed, then I won't do it. But I do have another amendment I'd like to offer at some point if it's appropriate.
Now, okay. I think we're done with this section because staff is going to fix the citation. So thank you, Senator Scheid. I think we're done with your section.
Chair, thank you.
Unless someone else has an amendment to this section. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dahl.
Thank you very much.
We do have, I'd like to put one more item back on the table, and this, I think, was just inadvertently left off.
All right.
This is Senator Prentner Solon's bill on the greenhouse gas emissions reporting. The rider language that pays for this is in the bill, but we forgot the actual bill language. So we just need, it was in a previous draft and it just got lost. So this just needs to be, this language is the language as we passed it in our committee, and we need to just put it back in the language in the bill.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Knopf.
I see the provision on rules. This is the original bill. Mm-hmm. Did this go through state and local intact?
Yeah, Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Jurofsky.
Madam Chair, members, I did just go back and check to make sure that the bill did go through the Energy Committee without amendment, and it went through the state and local without amendment, and we just checked our records when we heard it here, and it was not amended. So it is still the original bill. So that's what
that's very unusual.
It's supposed to include rules. I forgot that. Yeah. And that's not part of the fiscal note. The fiscal note doesn't mention rules, so.
Well.
It just mentions some staffing time.
May.
There you go, May. Okay. So this is the language we approved last week, members. So I'd ask if someone could just move adoption of this language. Thank you. Senator Rummel moves adoption of the language of Senate File 444. Article 1.
Question, Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Where's the standalone bill now?
It's here. It's right here, which is why it needs to be in the bill. We required the bill to stay in this division because it's tied to the appropriation. So I think Senator Prentner Solon would be rather upset if we didn't include it.
Has it been heard in this committee?
Yes. And yes. All right. On Senator Rummel's motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion passes.
No.
All right. Further discussion?
Are we done with Article 1, Madam Chair?
We're just doing them all together.
Okay. Well, I'd like to bring up the issue for an amendment on the E85 pump grants that we talked about downstairs.
And the page, can you tell us the page number? Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, it's in the energy article. And what we would need to do is right now there's no specific rider for the E85 grant program. So I think what Senator Kubley would want to do is direct us to put a rider into the under Office of Energy Security, doing appropriation, a one-time appropriation, which is how we're tracking it, for the E85 grant program, and then referencing the laws Chapter 2007, Chapter 57, Article 2, Section 3, Subdivision 6, where we laid out some of the other guidelines of the program. And then Senator Kubley can talk about what addition he would like to make to what previously was approved as the guidelines for the program.
Well,
thank you, Madam Chair. What has been previously approved refers strictly to the E85 pumps. And the way the department has interpreted that stations then that put in the blender pumps that, offer the 10% blend plus 20, 30, 50, and E85, then they're only reimbursed for 20% of the eligible costs instead of the 100%. But I think the intent of the legislature was to increase the sale of ethanol as an alternative fuel. So it seems to me that the blender pumps meet that criteria and should be eligible for the full reimbursement amount the same way that a pump that dispenses strictly E85.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. I think that's a really good suggestion. I'm just looking to see if there's anyone from Commerce who has any, if anyone has any objection from Commerce to doing this. But I don't know that they're even here at this point. So does everyone understand? Mr. Mueller.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Kubley, I was looking at the language from 2 years ago, and that does reference just sort of two limits. There's a existing 75% of the total costs, and then there's a maximum of $1,500 per pump.
$15,000.
Huh? $15,000, yes. So I think we'd want to say something to the that they must consider up to 75% of the total cost of a on-site blending project up to the maximum that's already established of $15,000.
Right. Yeah, the only thing I'm seeking to change is to allow the blender pumps to get the qualifying amount.
All right, can we vote on this concept?
Sure.
Is it specific enough? Does everyone understand what we're doing? Everyone understands Senator Kubley's motion. Okay, hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Hahn.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to page 18 on Article 1. I guess I'm just not sure that the language on lines 18.4 to 18.7, I guess I just find that a little troubling that we're making that in law here, and I guess I'd like to move to delete that, and maybe the department would want to comment on that.
Which lines?
Lines 18. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Lines 18.4 to 18.7.
All right, Senator Hahn moves to delete those four lines from the bill. We could take some very brief comments from the department on this. Who wants to come forward? And members, I'll remind you that we had quite a bit of testimony on this in our committee from stakeholders, from organizations, from individuals in the last week or two who expressed their concerns about this, and they probably are not all here, and I don't want to rehash the whole discussion. So we'll just give the department a minute to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Steve Hirsch. I'm DNR Ecological Resources Director. And I'd also add that I have been assigned as the lead for the agency in working through the transition of integrating the two divisions, Division of Waters and the Division of Ecological Resources. And just very briefly, what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about what the rationale was behind this and what we're trying to accomplish, and now answer any questions that any members might have. But I want to emphasize that DNR leadership had a long and extensive strategic discussions about making this organizational change before we went ahead and decided to do it. And we ultimately came to the conclusion that this proposed change, actually the change that we decided to do, can improve our ability to address land use practices and the interrelationship of land use practices and the effect on water. And since announcing the change, I know we've generated a lot of concerns, as the chair has alluded to, with some of the groups, and we expected that this would happen. But I can also tell you that we have generated, I think, a fair amount of positive energy, and especially within the department, and especially with some of the folks in these two divisions that would be affected by this change. And we're making a lot of progress in getting folks to see some of the opportunities and possibilities. And we're concerned that the time limit the time limitation of not being able to implement the change that's in the bill really sends the wrong message. It sends a message that this change may not happen. It really complicates the process for us. I think it will diminish some of the positive energy that we've been able to generate, and ultimately reduces the chance of achieving the goals that we've set out to achieve. We don't have any problem at all with the language requiring stakeholder input. In fact, we had every intention of getting stakeholder input in this process, and we had an initial meeting with some of the stakeholders that have expressed concerns and assured them that they would have a strong role in helping us to move forward. I think the one thing that I would like to emphasize is that we're not talking about program diminishment here, and I think that's some of the concerns that have been expressed by the stakeholders. And they're concerns, by the way, that I have a lot of appreciation for, because I have grown to have a lot of appreciation for the programs in ecological resources and waters as well. But we are not talking about program diminishment. What we're concerned about is that the current status quo is not going to be sufficient to get us where we need to get in terms of managing watersheds more effectively and having a greater influence on land use practices. And, it was actually the department's been talking about a watershed approach for a long, long time. And I remember discussions back in the late 1980s and launching pilot projects, the Big Sandy Lake Watershed Project, the Leech Lake Watershed Project. And these were good projects, and they accomplished some good things. But the reality is we've never really been able to get past the pilot stage when it comes to these sorts of watershed efforts. And we really need to see if we can make some organizational changes that will help us to catalyze our efforts and have more of a landscape-scale effect on what's happening in the state. And, whenever a change like this is is announced, it's bound to create concern. But I point out just a little bit, very briefly, about the history of the Division of Ecological Resources itself. When I started in the department, it was little more than a technical arm in the Division of Fish and Wildlife. And most of the people in that technical arm really viewed the positions there as stepping stones trying to get into fish and wildlife. And this division has really grown, and the influence in the department has really increased over the last decade to 15 years. And I think of what if we were concerned about making some of the changes that made this division stronger, and we didn't do that back in that time. We wouldn't have the same sort of strength in the division that we have today. I think just perhaps the main message I'd like to leave with, and then I can answer any questions if there are, is that what we're really trying to do here is integrate the programs in these two divisions, which do have a lot of connections and interrelationships, so that we can do a more effective job with taking a watershed approach, protecting biodiversity, and really protecting ecological resiliency in watersheds. And we really think that this is a key time to do this. And I think the additional funding that we've gotten with the Clean Water Legacy funding and the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council funding really is presenting a golden opportunity. We're talking about, with Clean Water Legacy efforts, taking a watershed approach where we address impaired waters on a watershed basis and cycling through those watersheds on a 10-year cycle. And if we can do a better job of integrating our programs and connecting with this plan, then I can see us taking funding sources like capital bonding and the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council and focusing habitat efforts in areas where we're trying not only to address impaired waters, but trying to keep waters that are trending towards impairment from becoming impaired. And I really think that this is the right time for this change, and I think that we would really like to do it with stakeholder input, but we really don't want to be constrained by saying that we can't implement it until a certain date.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Senator Pariseau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hirsch, how will this model be enforced? How will it be enforced? The watershed districts are in charge, I found out.
Mr. Hirsch.
Madam Chair and Senator Pariseau, there's no simple answer to that. And what we're really looking at here is that when you're talking about trying to affect land use changes on a watershed scale, it's regulatory, but it's also a matter of trying to influence what happens out there, because we don't, the DNR, nor does any other unit of government, control completely what happens on the land, which ultimately influences what happens in the water. So what we're talking about doing is trying to have a more effective integration of the programs that deal with regulation and the programs that deal with community assistance and influencing people to be better stewards and to do better things on the land. So I can't really answer your question and say, how are we going to enforce this, because it's really more than that.
Well, as the experience that we've had in our area so far in the shed that I'm in, the public meetings that were held all over the district yielded the same thing. People are opposed to it because farmers or anyone who owns land want to be able to do what they want with their land, and that doesn't mean crime or criminal sorts of things. But the townships are almost being threatened with, if you don't adopt this plan, we're going to give you a grand plan, and if you don't adopt it and implement it, you will lose your permitting powers. Now, who that owns land would want to be subject to a whole agency instead of the local people who, in their township, who are the permitters today? I think it sounds like the biggest bludgeon ever coming down from government.
Madam Chair and Senator Pariseau, we're not
and the Joint Powers Board is going to be kind of ugly, I think.
We're not necessarily talking about increasing the scope of the regulatory authority of these two divisions. We're talking about taking the existing programs in these two divisions and integrating them so that we can be more effective in influencing and regulating where we do have authority already to regulate what happens in watersheds and in water.
All right. I think, members, I really don't think we have any more time to spend on this philosophical discussion right now. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. I appreciate it. And, you know, as I said, we had testimony before from people who raised concerns about the merger. I understand the department wants to move forward. I think that it would be good to continue the discussion before the merger moves forward, personally, because I'm just There's questions about whether it's in the best interest of both of the divisions, but I think, members, we should just vote and move on. All right, on Senator Hand's motion, is there any further discussion? All right, on Senator Hand's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion does not prevail. All right, let's move on. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just an observation on that last discussion. I've never seen Mr. Hirsch so passionate. Amendment, I've spoken with on page 28, and there's a corresponding section on page 14, too. Mm-hmm. I've spoken with Senator Bach about this, and he is fine with this suggestion. Some of us like the name North Shore Trail, but agree that C.J. Ramstead should be commemorated. So my suggestion is, and I did run this by Senator Bach, and actually it might even improve things. Instead of saying the C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail, I'd like to reinstate the stricken language and delete the new language and just have it say North Shore / C.J. Ramstead Trail.
So you want a hyphenated name.
Well, it wouldn't be hyphenated. It would be forward slash.
A forward slash.
Right.
Name.
And I counted it out, Madam Chair, and there is actually fewer syllables in this amendment than just calling it the C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail. And I spoke with Senator Bach about this. It kind of keeps the spirit of the North Shore Trail, but commemorates C.J. Ramstead nonetheless. And then we would have to make the corresponding change on page 14, line 16. But the process for it, non-state sources to pay for new signs and everything would remain. So that's my amendment. And like I said, I did chat about this with Senator Bach, and he is fine with it.
Okay. Does everyone understand? That's a motion. Does everyone understand Senator Chaudhry's motion? Senator Zagzag.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Chaudhry, did you talk with him after the policy committee meeting?
Madam Chair, Senator Zagzag, I spoke to him during this committee meeting, before he left.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. On the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. All right, we need to make another change related to the energy article, and this relates to Senator Dibble's bill on the hydro plant, and we had a lot of discussion with members about how to fit that in to the renewable energy production incentive REPI program. So, Mr. Mueller.
Well, Madam Chair, I think there's really two ways to approach this. We could either say maybe on lines 4.6 after incentives of up to $500,000 per year per facility, and that would cover on-farm biogas and hydroelectric facilities in the future if there's any large. Or we could just maybe put a sentence at the end if we just want to focus on hydroelectric facilities and say the maximum amount of incentive payment for a hydroelectric facility shall not exceed $500,000 per year.
Well, I would prefer to have it as narrow as possible because this is a real exception to the past use of the fund, and it's raising the cap a lot. So I don't think we want to do it across the board. I think we should do it as narrowly as possible. So, you would add it in the last
sentence. Madam Chair, it would be a sentence right at the end of the period on lines 4.8.
Okay. That would just create a cap for a hydroelectric facility would be $500,000 a year.
Per facility.
Madam Chair, I would move that amendment.
All right. On that amendment by Senator Fredrickson. Again, this is from the Renewable Development Fund. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. Is there any other discussion on the language articles? And we still haven't gone through the spreadsheet, members. That's kind of what a lot of people are waiting for. Should we do that? Talk money. All right, Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, I'm working out the spreadsheet that I believe has been passed out. It's called the Environment, Energy, Natural Resource Budget Change Items, All Funds with General Fund Summary. It says draft up on the right-hand corner.
Oh, you crossed that out.
Oh. It is not draft anymore.
Well, that's good.
But
Timestamped,
yes. It'll be time 12:54 p.m. 4/16/2009 on the bottom right-hand side. So we're all working off the same one.
We've started.
I'll be going through the change items that reflect the Senate proposal. So they'll be working off the middle columns there that say Senate Rec 2010-2011. We'll start the way this is formatted basically is each agency has its base appropriations listed at the top and then change items by fund and then new totals. There's a general fund summary at the end. Again, Senator Anderson mentioned earlier that we have a 7% general fund reduction target, which is just a little bit over $24 million for this budget area. So starting on the change items for PCA lines 13 through 21, the governor proposed an $850,000 reduction per year for the Clean Water Partnership Program. That is not included here. What the change items the Senate has made on lines 14 through 18 are mostly 7% reductions in each of those programs. The Water Programs Operations, the SSTS Program reduction, Community Technical Assistant reduction, and the County Feedlot Program reduction. And then there's also a Land Program Operations reduction of, again, that's about a 7% cut to $35,000 each year. The OEA and cross-media reduction is about double what the governor had of $200,000 per year. Again, we're not tracking the moving of the EQB over to the PCA, which the government in their tracking had that as a cost item. And then we have an administrative support reduction of $150,000 per year, which is a little bit above the governor. Our net general fund reduction for PCA is $1.34 million. And at the end, if you want to judge that as a percent, it's about a 5.8% reduction to the general fund portion of PCA. Environmental fund change items, follow that on lines 25 through 38. The governor had a $450,000 per year initiative for dealing with joint power agreements of stormwaters. That's not included. A water program operations reduction was in the governor's bill. That's included here. The air emissions database, now the numbers we're carrying here refer to Senator Pretner Solon's bill that we just talked about before and adopted. And this was the numbers that came from that fiscal note of $88,000 the first year and then $39,000 ongoing. This mostly just deals with the greenhouse gas program sort of database. The air program reduction, that was in the governor bill of $228,000. Land program operations reductions of $149 per year, that was in the governor's budget. And then the new funding item of $300,000, $3 million per year is also in the governor's bill. The reason why this is tracked as a new initiative, this is actually to continue existing level of spending for PCA. We gave them $3 million of one-time money in the current biennium and didn't continue it on, and they were supposed to report back to us with some fee increase initiatives to sort of continue this funding. So without this, their permitting, the money for their permitting areas would really drop off. So that's $3 million per year. That's in the governor's budget also. The governor had $750,000 per year dealing with climate change and federal action and court costs. That's not included. The governor increased SCORE grants by $500 per year, and this proposal has it at $250 per year. We have a one-time $200,000 amount for the composting grant program from Senator Stevens' bill. And then the next item is the cost for the Senator Scheid bill that we just talked about. And this includes the cost for the Department of Health. Put a little bit extra money in the first year because of the amendment that we adopted the other night. And PCA said that might increase their costs to administer it. So this is a little bit more than what the fiscal note has shown, especially for the first year. The next reduction, environmental assistance and cross-media operations reduction, that was in the governor's proposal. The governor had a proposal that increased the septic system licensing fees, so that $270 per year is an increase tied to a fee increase, which is not included in this proposal. The last two items are in the governor's bill. They're just the air emission fees is a federal requirement that we have to increase our spending dealing with air emissions. And then the last item is dealing with the e-waste. This just puts in a statutory appropriation for the e-waste. I should note here that I'm carrying tails on that, and I believe this proposal only goes for 2 years, the statutory appropriation, so it should be zeros on the lines 2012 and 2013. And then, in summary, the governor spent about $10.6 million of new environmental fund money. The Senate is at 6.4. And as a result of the new spending from the environmental fund, without having any new fees go into it, it sort of reduces the amount of money that is transferred over to the remediation fund. And with the governor's proposal of $10.6 million of new money from the environmental fund, that reduced environment or remediation fund expenditures an estimate by about $5.1 million. And this is shown in the fund balance documents prepared by finance that show the governor's budget. And I'm just putting an estimate since we have less new environmental fund expenditures. Our proposal, the Senate proposal, would reduce the remediation fund spending by only $2.7 million. And that's taking into consideration, there's a proposal in the Senate bonding bill that funds closed landfill cleanup using environmental fund money, and I'm also carrying that as a lost revenue item in line 51. Just so that we're aware that there's something in the bonding bill that also uses some environmental fund money. So subtotal change items, when you include all these changes, there's still an increase of about $2.4 million over the base for the PCA and $1.3 million reduction of general fund dollars. Next agency. The next page is the Minnesota Zoo. The change item there is a $500,000 reduction, which is about a 7% cut compared to the governor had a 10% cut of $707,000 per year reduction. On to the DNR. Again, the line 68 through 74 are all the base appropriation numbers from the various funds. And then going down will be all the change items. Line 77 is a reduction to the PILT, reflecting a 7% reduction to PILT. And there's various sections in the bill that would reflect that. We would have to insert a number basically saying that we would pay 93% of what is currently authorized. And that is opposed compared to the governor's reduction of was a 20% reduction in PILT. The next two items, line 78 and 79, are sort of combined. That's a general fund reduction to the area of lands and minerals that is being replaced with a new fee that is being carried in the natural resources fund, and we'll get to that later. So that's basically a general fund, natural resources fund swap being paid for with a new fee. This was the governor's initiative. On line 80 is a 7% reduction to the Mississippi Headwaters Board. The governor proposed eliminating the general fund for that. The next Senate item is the Red River mediation reduction. That's a 7% reduction also. The governor proposed a $70,000 reduction. The next item is a Senate additional cut to the waters area of $100,000 per year. The next one is the governor's proposal to reduce, cut the $500,000 per year for shoreland rulemaking, and this was basically an appropriation from the current biennium that got carried over in the base, but the DNR had basically testified that they'll finish the rulemaking without this $500,000. The next item is essentially some shifting some money within the forestry area. We would do the $2 million increase per year proposed by the governor for just the forest management activities. We would zero out the $500,000 per year for the private landowner assistance program. And we would also reduce the forest fire prevention activity. There's about a $7.4 million appropriation or so for that, and this would reduce that amount. The net effect of all these changes is a $234,000 general fund reduction to forestry. So it's a pretty small reduction. But it is a net general fund reduction. It just shifts some little bit of money between different appropriations and puts more of it up into the management area where they have a little bit more flexibility of spending it. The next reduction is a general fund reduction to parks and trails. We've combined the two divisions of parks and trails together now, so it's a 5% general fund reduction to parks and trails. The next items on line 90 through 95 are all reductions in the area of fish and wildlife, and most of these were within the governor's proposal. The proposal basically eliminated most of general fund funding for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The first item there on line 90 was in the governor's bill, eliminating general fund funding for fish management. The governor proposed no general fund for the 1837 Treaty Fish Population Survey. We did not take that cut. We did a little bit less of a cut to the aquatic plant restoration. We've got the governor's amount here for wildlife management, and then zero cut to the Prairie or to Minnesota Shooting Sports Center.
Four thousand.
Well, yeah, we have to write that. Everyone can write that in. It will be a $4,000 reduction to the Shooting Sports Center, which will
per
be
year.
About a seven per year, which will be about a 7% cut to them. So it'll leave them with $50,000. Madam Chair, then on the prairie wetlands, the governor proposed eliminating the general fund money for prairie wetlands, and the Senate proposal here has just a $200,000 per year reduction. Bovine TB, right now I want to note that there's $61,000 in the general fund base for bovine TB activities, tuberculosis, so this funds the governor's level. Lines 97 through 99 are additional Senate reductions, 5% reduction in ecological services, and a 5% reduction in invasive species reduction, for which is $400,000 and $200,000 reduction, and then a 7% reduction to enforcement. And then the last item there, line 100, the governor proposed just a sort of flat or across the board $1.9 million reduction that they had language that allowed them to sort of spread that cost throughout the agency. And what the Senate is proposing here with all of our cuts is being specific about those cuts and not doing an across the board cut that would give the commissioner the authority of where to put those cuts. So the last cut there is a reduction in the operations part of DNR of $450,000. So the net general fund reduction to DNR is $15.06 million. Percentage-wise, that's about 6.3% reduction in their general fund. On page 3, we deal with the changes to the Natural Resources Fund. Again, line 104 is sort of the swap out where we made a general fund reduction to lands and minerals and replaced it with a new fee. And this is being tracked here. This was a governor's initiative. There's a small change item for allowing some additional statutory appropriation costs to go out with the water permit applications. We're showing a large change item on line 106 that also carried in the governor's proposal of reduced spending from the forest management investment account. And this is a reduction from their base just because the revenue is not coming in. So this is a reduced spending for forestry that they would not, that's part of the Natural Resources Fund. And again, that was in the governor's budget too. And I will note that there was actually an unallotment in fiscal year 2009 already for the activities out of forest management investment account because the revenues were already short there then. The next item is the Outdoors Minnesota initiative that was in the governor's bill. This would take funding from a couple different natural resources fund accounts and for promotion activities, the water rec account, snowmobile account, parks account. Forget the other one, but four different accounts. The OHV account. The next item, the governor had $725,000 coming out of the water rec account to deal with shoreline improvements. What the Senate proposal is, and Mr. Knopf noted that there's a section in the bill that transfers money from the water rec account down to the invasive species account. So we're basically taking that $725,000 that would otherwise be spent here and moving it down to the water rec or to the invasive species account. And just to let them keep on spending their base amount, there's a large hole in the invasive species account right now because some of the revenues that we had identified initially for that account just haven't produced or come up with what we had originally for the planned spending of that account. So if we did not do this, there would have to be about a $700,000 reduction in invasive species expenditures. The next item is an additional spending out of the water rec account of $575,000 per year dealing with access sites and maintenance and improvements. A lot of this extra money from the water rec account is due to the increased gas tax allocated money to various accounts in the natural resources fund, and the water rec account got a pretty big chunk of new money from that, so we're able to do some new spending out of that account. The next item is again out of the water rec account. It's a $100,000 per year one time to provide some GPS coordinates and river gauge data. The next two items were in the governor's supplemental budget. They're appropriating some extra lottery and lieu money for the first one would be for a program that they would operate with Explore Minnesota Tourism to help promote the parks and work on information that promoted the parks and I believe a website maybe. Mm-hmm. And a $50,000 increase for local trail grants. Again, those two items were in the governor's supplemental budget. The last two items deal with gray wolf monitoring, and this was in a governor's request to use money out of the non-game wildlife account. And what the Senate's proposing here is to do the monitoring and research, but not the depredation control activities. The funding just the portion of the governor's request. The last change items here deal with the Game and Fish Fund, and the first three items are all from the Heritage Enhancement Account. These are all governor's initiatives to fund some forestry activities out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. Again, money from that account comes from the lottery and lieu sales tax. $600,000 per year for ecological classification, $350,000 per year for invasive species management, and $250,000 the first year for forest productivity for the future program. And then there's a last change item here. It's basically making an appropriation for the walleye stamp program that we enacted last year, just getting that money out. And I'll note that all those appropriations for the forestry from the Heritage Enhancement Accounts are one time. They do not carry over into tails. So the net effect to the Department of Natural Resources for all funds is a $16.398 million reduction, and it's about a $15.06 million reduction of general fund. On new revenues, the first item, as Mr. Knopf noted when he went through the bill, there's an increase in some of the water appropriation fees, and we'll have to put the numbers in here, and I'll get to those maybe when I'm done with the spreadsheet about what the new amounts would be. But it would increase the maximum fee for the very large users that's currently capped at various amounts that are mentioned in the bill and on page 35 and 36 of the bill. And we would increase some of those caps. And also we would increase the summer surcharge, which is currently at $20 per million gallons, up to $30, to $30 per million gallons. The summer surcharge increase nets out at about $350,000 per year, and increasing those caps to the very large user gets us, or puts about an extra $150,000 per year into the general fund. These fees go to the general fund, so this money just helps us offset our target, allows us not to do another $1 million of cuts somewhere else in the bill. The next two fee items were in the governor's bill. Again, this ties to the utility license and easement applications and the permit to mine fee increases. This is spent to help offset a general fund reduction in the area of lands and minerals. Met Council Parks. The general fund reduction there on line 140 of $200,000 per year on the Senate side is a 5% reduction. In looking at the lottery in lieu account for Metro Parks, there is a sustainable amount of extra money we can appropriate to Metro Parks that comes from the lottery in lieu account of $500,000 per year. Now, this is money that comes from the lottery in lieu sales tax that goes into a dedicated account used just for the Metro Parks. So this isn't taking from anything else. This is just appropriating money that's already in that account. The Conservation Corps, I think we want to change that to 20. Since the change amount is going to be a negative $20,000 per year instead of 24. So we change that on the spreadsheet and in the tails of $20,000 per year, which is a little bit less than a 5% cut. The governor had $24,000 per year. The last, next agency is Bowser. Line 165 is sort of the administrative general fund reduction. The governor had a $789,000 reduction. The Senate has $860,000. And then the next three lines here are just some roughly 5% reductions to some existing grant programs. The Natural Resources Block Grant, the SWCD Services Grants, and the Cost Share Vegetation Buffer Grants. Again, those reductions there are about a 5% reductions to each one of those grant programs. The next one, the Cost Share Project Grants reduction, was the governor's level of $840,000 per year. And then we made some 7% reductions to those existing boards, the Red River Basin Commission, the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board, and the Area 2 Floodplain, where the governor eliminated general fund funding for each of those entities. The Senate here has a 7% cut to each of those. And the last change item was, again, was one that we were carrying from the governor, is a $160,000 reduction to drainage management grants. So their net general fund reduction is $3.78 million, which is a little bit more than the governor had. He had 3.469. Percentage-wise, it's about Bowser. 10%. It's about 10.9% general fund reduction to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The Science Museum, the $63,000 reduction there is about a 5% reduction. Again, that was the same as the governor. For the LCCMR, again, I'm just tracking what was already passed in the separate LCCMR bill, just for tracking purposes. Public Utilities Commission, and I would like to note that in Article 2, we'll have to insert a line where we actually appropriate to the Public Utilities Commission. Right now it's missing a line. Small oversight. But we want to make sure they get their money. That'll just be one line, and we'll have that be part of a technical motion. But there's no change items to the Public Utilities Commission. The governor had an initiative that would have collected $400,000 per year and then spent it for, cut here is called contract with non-state entities. It would be some auditing and such. That is not part of this proposal. The last department is the Department of Commerce. Again, the only general fund change item is E85 grant reduction, there's a base amount of $1 million, and this reduces it by $750,000, leaving $250,000 for E85 grants. And again, we adopted the Kubli language that would allow it to go out for a little bit more for the blended projects, on-site blending projects. And then under the TAM fund, this is for the regards to the Senator Rest Bill, Senate File 1600, in that bill there were three line item proposals, and this funds two of them, but does not fund the appropriation that would go to the Office of, what's it called? The
Technology.
Information. The Chief Information Officer. So it does fund the website for the deaf, hard of hearing, or the commission that was. Their help that was in the bill that it would help fund their website, and then the LCC
streamline.
And again, that was in Senate Rest Bill. Lastly, here we have some spending of new RDF money, and this would be spending of new RDF money that's not already been appropriated in previous years. There's about $2 million of expenditure. $1.975 million of expenditures here. $300,000 for geothermal heat mapping. This was from the Senator Prettner-Solem bill. $625,000 per year for the CERTS program. This is a continuation of basic current year funding. The Green Jobs Initiative that was in the bill, $25,000, and then $400,000 for solar rebates. And in the previous or the current biennium, we are funding solar rebates out of the RDF also. And I should also note that in the federal stimulus bill in the solar program, there was some language that they're allowing for solar rebates also, but just it wasn't a specified dollar amount. The revenue change item on line 238 is from the governor's proposal to allow the Office of Energy Security to fully assess their costs to all the utilities. This nets out $568,000 to the general fund. The last lines here is just sort of a general fund summary of how we get to the 7% reduction target. And you can see the each agency's general fund totals there, and then there's a percent that shows their overall reduction. Basically, we have $22.458 million of general fund reductions in the bill, which is 6.5%. We're booking some new revenue, both from the assessment and the new water fees of $1.568 million. Gets us to our $24 million reduction, or 7% target. The last lines there on the bottom, on 268 and below, are just a summary of the fee changes in the bill by fund. And the governor has $5.536 million of fee and revenue changes, and the Senate has $5.196 million of fee revenue changes in this bill. And that is it for the spreadsheet.
All right. Well, thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Comments? All right. I want to extend my great appreciation to all of the staff who have worked many, many long hours, and guess what? They're not done yet, but to put this bill together and to work with us to help us get our jobs done.
Are you ready for a motion?
I think so, Senator Frederick. Mr. Mueller, we have something else to do.
Yeah, there's a couple of numbers I want to fill in the bill just to make sure they weren't specified in the spreadsheet that I want to make sure we get in. The first is in Article 1, pages 35 and 36. And this deals with those water appropriation fees. And on line 36, on the blank there, we should enter 60,000. So it goes from 50 to 60,000.
Mr. Mueller, I'm sorry, what line was that?
Oh,
36.
36.
Line
35, line 36.
And then continuing on to the next page, 36, line 1. After the 75, the blank there, we should put 90. And after the 250, $250,000, we should put $300,000. This is about a 20% increase for each one of those maximum amounts. And then the last change on line 36.20, where 20 is stricken, we should insert 30 in the blank. The other change, the number we should fill in, is on page 27. This deals with the transfer of money from the water rec account to the invasive species account. On the lines 27.24, we should insert $725,000. So each year that amount would transfer to from the water rec account down to the invasive species account.
All right.
Chair, I would move adoption of those.
Those numbers. All right. On Senator Fredrickson's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Anything else?
Let's see what page is that on.
Page 8.
Madam Chair, on page 8, line 8.4, this just establishes a floor of the amount of money that should be transferred from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund. Right now, it's pretty much up to the Commissioner PCA for how much to transfer. And see, the number here should be, I believe we'd be safe with $20
million.
Oh, for the buy-in, we should be 40. And if talking to PCA ongoing here as we move on, that's a number that they're not comfortable with. We can maybe open to changing that. But I think 40 right now should be a good floor.
I move that change.
All right. On Senator Fredrickson's motion, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
The other item, and it's in a number of section, is there's blanks referencing the percent reduction for PILT.
Uh-huh. Take that from the spreadsheet.
Yeah, but there's nothing that says 97% or 93%. Mm-hmm. So we should just, in every instance where it says a percent, to reflect what's in the spreadsheet, which is a 7% reduction, we should say a 9. I think the way it works for most of them, it's we would pay 93% of the payment. That's in three different sections?
Three places
right. In the bill.
All right. Senator Fredrickson moves insertion. You want to move that?
Just those, or should we include that with a bigger map?
I've got one more.
Oh, one more.
Oh, yeah, move that. So.
All right. Would you like to move those PILT numbers?
Madam Chair, I would.
All right. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
And one more thing I want to note on page 7. And this is the dealing with the way we appropriate money to PCA. Previously, we had split apart OEA and cross media. Since then, they've combined the appropriations, and right now, we had language in here having it split up, but on my tracking and everything, I have it back together, and the governor's numbers are all together, OEA and cross media. So I think we should appropriate it as a combined divisions and delete subdivision 6, cross media. And then back on lines 5.25, where it says environmental assistance, add and cross media.
It's a simple way to do it.
I would move those changes.
All right, on that motion, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I would move that the spreadsheet identified as 12:54 p.m. the 16th of April be adopted and incorporated in the documents Article 1 and Article 2, and that staff be authorized to make conforming, technical, and rounding changes to the document to combine them, and that be forwarded to full committee, recommended to pass, and introduced as a committee bill.
Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. I think that also we've already incorporated the changes made to the document before we adopted it. The
documents as amended.
As amended. All right, on the motion.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify. In past years, we've sent basically a draft bill to the Finance Committee and introduce it after that. As I understand it, this year we're looking at instead of a committee bill, it would be just a bill that Senator Anderson would introduce for the division that would be sent to the Finance Committee, so before it goes to Finance. Just want to be clear on that. Sure.
Great. Thank you. All right. If there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. That's all. Members, thank you all for your work and the long hours today, and we've got a lot more work ahead of us, but for now, the meeting's adjourned.